Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Joseph Gibson is running for the House of Representatives in North Carolina's District 65. We have to start voting for patriots who love this nation, and conservative nation media proudly endorses him. Joseph Gibson is one of those patriots, and it's not too late. We need to start realizing that there is not a different truth for everyone. As the liberals say, there is only one truth. A vote for Joseph Gibson for North Carolina's District 65 will help bring back the integrity Americans have been missing. Paid for by the committee to elect Joseph Gibson to the North Carolina House District 65. See you at the polls, patriots.
Tune in for the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann Show, Sundays, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, to discuss current events, news, and political opinion with Lucid Libertarian flair. I promote liberty, freedom, our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and limited government, while speaking against corporate and government corruption, tyranny, and the globalist Great Reset agenda that undermines our precious American sovereignty. Please also like and follow my Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann page on Facebook. You can help me battle their freedom-loathing censorship by visiting my page regularly, along with reacting, commenting, and sharing my posts. Thank you, and I hope listening to my show becomes part of your Sunday night routine. Tune in for the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann Show.
Conservative Nation Media has been around for 11 years now to give you the news that is fit to know about the state of America and what the politicians in Washington and around our nation are doing to our freedoms. We have strived to give you the true news that you cannot find in lamestream lying liberal media. And because of our love for this great nation, we are growing again. With new shows on CNN like American Statesman with Sally Baptiste and Crazy Nation Radio with Ron Reck, we are getting well-known names to join our network to make CNN a stronger voice for America. We have others who may be joining us too. American Statesman airs on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and Crazy Nation Radio airs mostly on Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, with other times of the week when he feels the need is there. Join Conservative Nation Media for all of our shows on Friday, Saturday, Monday, and Tuesday with our Sunday show, American by Design, returning too. That's Conservative Nation Media, where America always wins.
Black by Color Only Day here on CNN with our very own Vincent Brown out of Durham, North Carolina. Black by Color Only is one of the most informative shows on CNN, giving us the reasons that the apostles of blackness are leading this nation in the wrong direction, along with the left. And Vincent will come down on the right too when they do not do what is right. Listen to the wisdom of Vincent Brown on Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will find out that the media is lying to us too, along with the leftists in our government. Some of the right are too, and in Hollywood also. He will make you use your mind and think a bit before making a rash judgment. That is Black by Color Only, only on CNN at 5 p.m. Eastern on Saturdays, where America always wins.
In that Senate today was a cowardly group of Republicans apparently have no option to take.
Show me where it said that protest is supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Isn't something about your dad's immigration practices you feckless?
When they go low, he kicks.
How do you resist the temptation to run up and wring her neck?
The biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized, right on to the right.
I thought he should have punched him in the face. Even if he lost, he insulted your wife.
Yes.
He came down the escalator and called Mexican rapists and murderers. He said, well, what do you think I should have done? I said, I think you should have punched him in the face and then gotten out of the race. He would have been a hero.
I'd like to punch him in the face. If I said, if we're in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
Punch some people in the face!
When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
It's amazing how people try to frame everything racially, and how they create divisions among our society.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Welcome to hour number one of NWCR Radio with your host, Robert Garding. This is Duke Brooks of Radio Free Delmarva from 92.7 WGMD, Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. And I'm proud to introduce my friend Robert as we fight to protect the America we know and love. Through the silver microphone of freedom with the voice of reason in this unreasonable world, you're listening to NWCR Radio, broadcast through the CNM network in Albuquerque, New Mexico, from our Freedom Studio. And now, here's Robert.
Good evening, and hello, Lorianne. I'm not really sure where to begin tonight because we've got so much going on with the special counsel for Biden saying, oh, no, we can't convict him. We can't prosecute him because he's a very elderly man with a low memory, and it would be wrong to do that. But what they're not looking at here is everything that he has essentially done, they're blaming Trump for. Well, if it's okay to let him go for it, then why are they still going after Trump? Hello, everybody. Good to see everybody here tonight. Hello, Lorianne.
Well, hello, hello. Happy Friday to you and everybody. It looks like we've got Boyd and Mike in the chat room. So I just said hi to them. Hopefully they will call in. When we have two Skype numbers that are in the switchboard, but hanging out listening. So hello, everybody. Good to see everybody starting to file themselves into the show here.
Yeah, we've got 225, which he raises his hand, so I let him in.
Hello, fellows. Hey. And lady.
How are you?
Oh, I'm
howdy
good.
Howdy do, Mike.
Hey, Lorianne, and we also got the Supreme Court laying the smackdown on the Colorado folks.
Yeah, like I said, there's a lot to talk about tonight, so I wasn't exactly sure where to start.
Yeah, I like starting off with that documents case with Biden. So basically, we're not going to press charges on Biden because he's an old man with dementia, and that would just be mean. That's essentially their rationale.
Yep, that's essentially what they did.
But they're
going to
charge Trump because Trump isn't an old man with dementia, and that's feeble. So basically, you can get away with whatever you want to if you're an elderly, feeble, absent-minded, confused old man. Yeah. Good to know.
Yeah.
You know, they keep bringing up the fact that Trump did exactly the same thing, but he didn't.
Some people think this is hypocrisy. No, it's not hypocrisy. It's hierarchy. They're in power and you're not, and they can get away with whatever they want to and you can't. Because you can bet your bottom dollar, if Trump is in office and having the same problems that, Biden is, which he wouldn't be, but, if Trump was there and he was having the same problems, you would be hearing, why isn't Pence or whomever is the vice president talking about, the 25th Amendment? Why aren't they trying to impeach him for being dangerous and because his mind is not there and he's got the nuclear football and all that stuff, So, yeah.
They're essentially telling us that we can't go after him because he's feeble and not well enough to be president, but he's president.
Well, that's not exactly what they're saying. What they're saying is we can't indict a sitting president, but if we could, if you read the whole 300 pages of the thing, what they're saying is if we could, this special counsel is outlining how to charge the man in this document, could charge him.
Oh, they could, but it's kind of like the southern border, If they Biden keeps saying that he needs to get more money so he can do this. Well, he could close that border immediately. All he'd have to do is just say it, sign it in as a executive order, and it'd be closed. And it wouldn't cost anything. I just brought in the one Skype number and 907. So you're both in here too.
Hello, Robert. How you doing, Robert?
I'm doing my best tonight, and Lorianne too.
And Lorianne too. I know I heard her sounding very chipper, so I knew she's doing well. But I heard this thing about the Justice Department's decision to defer any action on Joe Biden, and I understand that they have a long-standing rule in the Justice Department that sitting presidents can't be indicted, although they can get everything ready for when they're not. But while they're president, they can't, because after all, this occurred. This was something that occurred that was not within the scope of his duties as a senator, that he had by no constituents whatsoever, did he have any right to possess those documents at all. Now, it's like with Donald Trump, you can argue either way that he had a right to have them or he didn't, because he never did complete the Presidential Records Act archive negotiation process. They just went straight to a federal magistrate and a search warrant without completing it. But there's no argument whatsoever that Joe Biden had any right whatsoever to those documents at all. He's supposed to look at them in a skiff or in some secure location, and they're supposed to stay there as a senator. He's not supposed to take them with him. I have copies of them. But, when I first heard this story, I said to myself, man, this has got to be a headline from the Babylon Bee. I mean, think about it for a minute. Now, he's senile, and his memory ain't worth a damn, but he's running the federal the executive branch of the federal government of the United States. Somebody help me make this make sense, please. Somebody, is it possible? No, it isn't. And we have to live with this. We can't even envision putting him on trial, but we let him continue to run the federal government of the executive branch. It's just amazing to me. Executive branch of the federal government, it's just amazing. And we're sitting there, yeah, it makes sense. Some people, anyway. And, you know, and I'm going back to this. I'm going back to this idea about the border. I mean, look, you got Title 8, Section 12 of the federal law right now. Donald Trump used it. Joe Biden can use it too. Remember, when Donald Trump did it, though, they call him a racist. Remember, they call him a racist, but he did it. He shut down travel, and he cited Title 8, Section 12 as his rationale for shutting down the border because of COVID. And people coming from certain countries that were appeared to be transmitters of the virus. And by the way, remember his Yanukovych, who had got some job in the State Department, I think it was Yanukovych. She refused to follow his orders. So he had to fire her. I don't know if you guys remember that or not.
Yep.
But
I
that went
that.
Down that way. Yeah, I mean, you know, and you hear all these things about all of this, and this bill was just laden with poison pills. I don't know if they did it deliberately so they can say the Republicans don't want to fix the border or something, but no sane person concerned with the national security and the constitutional integrity of the United States could ever vote for that bill. There was a million things in it that all they do is codify and perpetuate illegal immigration and reward and incentivize more of it throughout the bill. There is nothing in it that is positive for securing the border or stopping the flow of illegal immigration. It does precisely the opposite. And it has $60 billion worth of pork for Ukraine.
Yep. Yeah, and they're putting more for Ukraine and several other things than for our own border.
Oh, yeah, one more thing, too, Robert. Remember, not only do you remember this or not, but a few years ago, I think like in 2015 or 2014, they found this Waffen-SS guard. He was a 97-year-old former Oberscharführer in the SS, and he had been assigned to a concentration camp. Now, they never accused him of doing anything but administrative duties in the concentration camp. They didn't even say he did any crimes like, even in the selection process, you know, go to the right, go to the left, he didn't do any of that. They didn't say he did any harm or murders to any individual citizen. All he did was sit in the administrative office and do accounting paperwork. Now, I know it was the German government that did this, but they decided to bring him up on charges, and they convicted him of being a participant in crimes against humanity. You're 97 years old.
Yep. It's amazing.
Alexander, I know the German government, it wasn't the United States government, but still, they didn't let up on him because he was 97.
Hey, Frank.
Yeah.
See you at the window.
Yep.
Yeah, but,
sure.
They didn't cut him no slack, man. But Joe Biden, he gets all the slack, and he probably committed more actual crimes than that SS guy did.
And he's not done yet.
Huh? And not
he's
done
not
yet.
Not done yet.
Not even. I'm telling you, man, the more things just get curiouser and curiouser, as Alice said when she went down the rabbit hole.
Yep. It's kind of getting scary, really is. So.
I just got to love how Biden, you know, reacts to, you know, his comments about, you know, his memory, you know, having memory issues and things like that. And so he says that, and then immediately he gets confused. Biden, let's see, I see that he said that he recently met with a long-dead French president.
Yeah.
I recently met with them.
Yeah, and he mixed up the Mexican government president with
the Egyptian president.
The Egyptian president
is the leader of Mexico.
If Trump would have done
anything, this is right after he's trying to defend himself. Yeah, I'm like, oh my god, this is so laughable. Like you can't fucking like script writers in Hollywood couldn't write better than this, man. Like it's just it's scary but hysterical at the same time.
Well, they're sitting back and watching this, making up scripts for future movies.
Well, here's the thing that gets me, okay?
Okay.
If this was supposed to be the October surprise, I wonder what the real October surprise is going to be.
I'm not looking forward to seeing it.
Hey, you know, this is Gunslinger. You know, when you have a person like that obviously suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's, you could go on WebMD here on the internet, www.webmd, and put in what are the characteristics of those diseases. Joe Biden fits it like a glove. And I'm not even a freaking doctor. I'm not even a doctor. God knows I should have been. I would have been a hell of a lot richer than I am right now. It wouldn't be the poorhouse. Okay. So the simple people out here like us can go to a medical site and look at what are the symptoms of dementia or Alzheimer's. And you can clearly see he's suffering from both probably. It's that severe. And I've seen those videos that you're talking about. I was looking at them this morning. I'm going, got to be kidding.
Gunslinger. You forget, Gunslinger. It can't be both. It's got to be either one or the other. Okay, so.
Far out of it, it's both.
Right. But anyway, this is a guy that is shaking hands with people that aren't with ghosts, that doesn't know how to get on to and off of a stage, that A, B, C, D, E, F, G. I can go down the list of things that he doesn't know what he's doing at any given time. Plus he farts in front of the Pope and he drops a bomb in front of the Queen, you know.
Well, he falls going upstairs. How many people do you know falls going upstairs? Now, I see falling downstairs. Okay, I might have done that a couple of times in my life, but I don't think I've ever fallen upstairs. I mean, you see, right there, that shows you right there. I even went out last night, did a little trip over to Hooters, and I got 6 compliments on my hat. I've got a baseball cap that says, "Fuck Biden," big, bold letters. I got 6 compliments.
Awesome.
6 compliments. Every time. That is the best $20 I ever spent in my fucking life on that baseball hat. Serious. I mean, it's a center of attention. And, you know, it's just, you know, like a little flag here and right there, big bold letters. Fuck Biden.
Yeah.
And
there you go.
And guys, and Sarge, you mentioned the Babylon Bee earlier. But here's the thing about the Babylon Bee. Over the past, say, 3 or 4 years, those headlines from that particular site, they may have put them on there at a certain period of time. 6, 8, 10 months later, they come true.
Oh, man, they are a great site. They are really good. They do great work. But I feel sorry for them. It's got to be hard now to find things to satirize because real life sounds to be a greater parody than almost anything they've ever done. Honest to God, do you realize they're having woke kindergarten classes now? They were showing Jesse Waters was showing some kindergartens running around with no Trump signs. kindergartners. Now, you'd have parodied something like this, a few of y'all would say, that's silly. That'll never really happen. Why you are so over the top? Every time these leftists accuse us of pointing out something that's becoming a trend, we say, no, this is a trend. Just a few years from now, this is what we will see. They say, oh, you're being excessive. You're being extreme. None of that will ever happen. And then lo and behold, it happens. And then what do they say? Never mind. Or we need to just find a way to manage it better. We don't need to get rid of it.
Yep, exactly.
Right. Nothing like these leftists. I've never seen a group of people like these leftists. I'm talking about the mindless fellow traveler useful idiot types. I'm not talking about people at the top who run everything. They're kind of ruthlessly smart in a way. Cunning, devious, ruthless, and smart. But the useful idiots and fellow travelers they have working for, they really confound me. I swear to God, they truly do.
And the other big thing that happened today, this week, guys, was the Tucker Carlson interview with Putin dropped. You know, that was huge. If you haven't seen it, I suggest you see it, you watch it, and it's a 2-hour interview, but it went by like that, you know, just you blink and it was over. He said a lot of things in that interview that surprised you, gave a nice long history lesson of the Russian people from the Middle Ages to now, and he also broke news about Tucker Carlson, that Tucker Carlson at one point tried out for the CIA and did not make it.
I've been aware of that about Tucker Carlson for some time. I don't know the details of it, but I know he did apply for the CIA. I remember him saying something about he didn't have the proper mentality to be a CIA agent. I think that's why they eliminated him.
Yeah.
I think that they were worried he would not be quite the kind of person to carry out sort of ruthless operations that the CIA might be demanding.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's not a revelation to me. Anyway, I was aware. He admitted. He said it on one of his shows that he had applied to work at CIA.
Yep. Yep. But that.
What was Putin? Was Putin saying that he was aware? Was Putin saying that he was aware that Carlson had done so?
Yes.
I'm not surprised.
Which made sense because he's ex-KGB.
That makes sense. No, but Tucker isn't exactly. I mean, Tucker never trumpeted it, but I have seen him admit to it before in the past.
But that interview was incredible. And there's a couple of other nuggets that twice he asked two different presidents, Putin, about getting into NATO, right?
Mm-hmm.
And twice they said, originally said, both Clinton and W both said yes, and then when they go back to you know, off to the side to talk to their people, they come back, they go, no, it's not going to happen. So obviously something went on there, you know, but we don't know, right?
Yep. Absolutely.
Did you see the whole interview?
Yes.
Did he make a crack about Taylor Swift? I heard he made a crack about Taylor Swift. Did he?
Yes, he did, among other things.
Yeah. What I heard was that somebody told me this was fake and it wasn't actually in an interview. But what I heard, we were asking about the Super Bowl. And Putin said that the Super Bowl was not going to be telecast in Russia. And then he asked, so that means you're not going to get to see Taylor Swift? I mean, that's what Tucker Carlson asked him. And then Putin's response was, yes, we're getting a reprieve.
Yes, exactly.
He did. He did say that? He did?
Yes.
Well, I like that then. All right. Yeah, I think I definitely got to see it now.
Yes. Yes. It is an incredible interview. I mean, look, he gave us a history lesson that I don't think we get in schools nowadays. You know, I mean,
he went on for about a half hour on, you know, the history of Russia, you know, and but yeah, like we know history that we don't usually pay attention to, or American centrist kind of focused history that we get taught in school, but we don't learn a whole lot about Russian history. So it was a very good, I have about like 20 minutes left of the interview to watch, but I've watched most of it. And yeah, the first half hour is big time history of Russia segment.
Yep. Yep. But yeah, you know, this guy, I mean, this is a hell of a news cycle. You know, and I agree with Bongino when he talks about, yeah, elections being snapshots and sound bites, right? Snapshots and sound bites. You cannot, when you look at that picture of his at Biden's garage with that box of papers and stuff, you cannot get away from that. And anytime he gets up on a microphone, you know, up to a microphone, you can't get away from that either. Snapshots and sound bites. You know? That's what Bongino says. And I mean, this guy's campaign for president should be over with all the stuff that's going down with him, you know. Should be over with. Now, my question is, do they have anybody in the wings? Because we know it's not going to be knee pads, you know. We know it's not going to be knee pads. But do they have anybody in the wings that's going to step up to take that job when they decide to take it away from him at the convention, you know? Because I think that's probably what's going to happen is they're going to do some jiggery-pokery stuff with the superdelegates, you know?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know. They've got a really weak bench as far as people with national name recognition. I guess one of the Hail Marys they've been floating, of course, is Michelle Obama. Michelle Obama is really a lazy person. I mean, insofar as actually working on things that are significant, she is really lazy, and she likes to be adored. She gets on the campaign trail. She knows she's going to be in for slings and arrows. And that is a woman that I believe likes to be adored. She has a really fragile ego. Now, one thing about Trump, he's got an ego, I mean, a huge ego, but he could take his lumps. I mean, he's got a strong chin. I don't think Michelle Obama's chin is very strong at all. I don't think she's up for the task. I don't think she wants to face that kind of flack that she's about to get if she goes in and runs for president.
Right. There are two different things that I've said and I've heard people say about Michelle Obama and why she's not going to accept it or run. One, she's an intensely private person, right? She didn't want to be there in the first place. When Barack ran, she's intensely private. And two, Obama won't like the fact that he likes the fact that he's the only president in the family. In other words,
he doesn't want Michael to run.
Well,
then it would all be exposed.
And the other thing about Michelle Obama is She doesn't want to have to pack her junk no more.
That's right. She packs it. She won't be able to pack it anymore. And the truth will be exposed. Just like we said.
Yeah.
Big Mike. You know, Big Mike.
She don't want to hear any rumors of that. She don't want people to bring up the ghost of Joan Rivers or anything. And now you know that's what people are going to be doing throughout the campaign. They're going to be doing it rightly or wrongly. They're going to be doing it. I don't think she takes very well to that sort of criticism. I really don't. I think she takes it very hard and very personal. Like you said, she's a very private person, I think for good reason. I don't think she likes to have scrutiny on her because there's a lot of skeletons in her closet, and I think she's afraid they're all going to come tumbling out when the door gets opened too wide.
Well, you got to realize that what you said, there's a lot of hard skeletons in her closet. His closet.
Yeah, hard bone. Hard bone.
Hard bone, there you go.
Yeah, you got it.
She is a really big bone woman.
Yeah, big bone there.
Here's the thing, man. Like I said, I believe in science. Leftists only believe in science when they think it suits their purposes. But I believe in science as an objective matter of fact. And if you look at some of the things about the female anatomy as opposed to the male anatomy, there are certain anomalies in her physique that lend themselves to the idea that she's not a woman. Now, I'm not saying that's absolutely true and I'm absolutely right because I don't know until I see a chromosome test. She could have anomalies. She just has anomalies. But look, it certainly raises the question.
Well, when you see, it's probably still on YouTube. She was being interviewed by somebody, I forgot who it was, but they were dancing on the stage there or something. You could clearly see there was something bouncing in her pants. Okay, it wasn't the ghost. Remember that video?
Maybe she.
Okay.
Maybe she just had a big clit. What do you think?
Something's big down there, and it wasn't tied up as the other side goes.
Well, what I base mine on, though, is I've looked at her hands a couple times. Not the fact that she has large hands, because, you know, a lot of women have large hands, but there's certain morphological characteristics of the male hand as opposed to the female hand. And like I said, for most women, the middle finger and the ring finger are approximately the same length, whereas in men, the ring finger is noticeably shorter than the middle finger. Now, that's not an absolute proof, but it's one of the things that forensic anthropologists look at when they try to determine whether skeletal remains are male or female, among other things. You know, like the size of the skull, the width of the skull compared to the width of the shoulders and the ratio that's involved and all these other kinds of things. And I saw her hands up there, and it looked to me like her middle finger and her ring finger were pretty much the same length as it is in most women I've known in my lifetime.
Well, maybe she's a hermaphrodite.
There you go. Well, you got to look at it, too, that there is no evidence or any pictures of the kids, her kids, supposedly kids, okay? There's no baby pictures. There's no wedding pictures of her pregnant. I mean, even the Bushy Boys, you can find pictures of their pregnancy and all that stuff when they were kids and everything. There's not a one on this internet, and it's worldwide. But that's kind of strange, don't you think? Really kind of strange. Mm-hmm. Where'd they come from? Just kind of pop out of their ear or something? Makes me go, huh.
Everything about the Obamas is murky, man. I mean, everything. So, yeah, you're right. It's like they're truly swamp creatures. I mean, from the darkest, deepest, oaky, pinocchi swamp.
I mean, you could go right now and
hey,
look
hey,
at
hey, 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 hey. Don't be talking down about the oaky, pinocchi swamp. God damn it. It's not that bad.
You know, you could go right now and you could find pictures of Trump's when they were little and probably when Melania was pregnant and all this stuff. And, you know, just a typical average American family. Not with these characters.
Yeah. But the truth has a way of coming out eventually. That's just, I just would like to know the truth of it before I kick the bucket. You know, but the truth eventually always comes out sometime.
That's right.
Think about this. You look at her next to Obama, and she has bigger arms than Obama. You know?
Well, of course, when you're a manly man, you should.
Yeah, you yep. should. You know who wears the pants in that family? Get it? Pants?
Yep.
Well, that's why come I told you. She was banging. The chef was banging Michelle.
You mean like
the banging that went on in the Senate House chamber?
Yes.
Well, in the Senate chamber? That kind of banging?
Yes.
That kind of banging.
Look, that chef was serving her in bed. He brought the tray over. She take the orange juice off, spill some on her. Uh-oh. And she's got on her night clothes, nothing under. So, yeah, he probably was banging her. I mean, she's young enough where she still get hot as hell, especially when she first wake up in the morning. Obama can't handle that big woman.
Oh, Bianca, come on, man.
Okay.
Hey, but who knows? I mean, hey, that's just as credible as anything else about the Obamas, the most incredible presidential couple I've ever heard or seen in my life. There is no proof about anything about them, especially him. There's no documentation about his early life prior to being an Illinois state senator upon which you can rely. Nothing.
That's for sure.
But there are those, according to what they said, documented stories of him going into those gay bathhouses and sucking guys off for dope.
We got a living witness named Larry Sinclair. He details it in a book.
Right. Oh, Larry Sinclair.
Book. He details the whole thing in a book, man.
That's right.
We also got a guy by the name of Wayne Allen Root, who's talked about Obama when he was in college, you know?
And if he went to college,
yeah, never
saw him. Where is his professors? Where is students? Say, hey, I went to school with the president, man. Nobody.
Even though Biden says in his book, quote, a gift from my father, whatever, that he hung out with the teacher, the professors, and the other people, you know. Okay, if he hung out with these professors. One of the, you know, he's in his 50s, whatever, maybe 60s, I don't know. I mean, possibly is one of these professors is still living, maybe, that he, quote, hung around with.
You know, if you went to school with the future president of the United States of America, I'd be bragging like a motherfucker. Okay? Hey, man, look there, you know, I sat right next to the future president, man, look at this. Nothing. Not even a peep.
Yeah.
What about his girlfriends? He didn't have no girlfriends in school. Oh, maybe boyfriends, but no girlfriend. No, nobody's ever stood up. Okay, so it's just like
a gunslinger. Gunslinger, I got the clincher. I got the clincher for you. Now, he wrote on official White House stationery shortly after he took office, not too long, maybe a year after, that complimenting the hospital staff of Kanaʻalehi Hospital in Oahu on their excellent care that he was given as his birthplace. And he said he wanted to compliment them for the excellent care they give newborns in alignment with the kind of care I got when I was born there. If you go to that hospital, you will not see one plaque. Not one commemorating icon or any indication that he was born there. Not in the lobby, not on the grounds of the hotel. Now think of it. The first black American born in that hospital, the first black American president born in a hospital, according to him, and there's no commemoration of it anywhere.
Remember, the first president, I believe, that was born in a hospital was, I think, Jimmy Carter. All the others have been burned like at home or in some other place other than a hospital. Jimmy Carter was, I think, the first. So here we got, we haven't had that many American presidents born in a hospital in the 20th century. And here's the first black one. And there's not a single commemoration of that historic fact anywhere in that hospital. Does anybody wonder it's not a living shame? Let's not forget the dozens of Social Security numbers that are associated with his name. Dozens.
Nothing. Well, you know, they were interviewing him and Big Mike, and he said, back in Barack's home country of Kenya, last time I looked, Kenya wasn't part of the United States. Even then. No, it wasn't. So, home country, that means that's where you were born at. My home country is the USA. I was born in Dallas, Texas. Okay. Kenya? Yeah, okay. Sure.
Yeah. Hey, how many commemorations across the United States are there to the fact that George Washington just slept here, not being born there, just slept there?
Yeah. See that outhouse out there? George Washington took a shit in that motherfucker. I mean,
that's right. You see him all over the place. Barack Obama, nothing.
Nothing.
And you remember, he made a public thing. He made a public affair out of it by saying he was born there. And then when people go to verify it with the hospital, you know what the hospital says? The hospital says that HIPAA prevents us from speaking about it. We can't speak about it because of HIPAA provisions. Then he said, but wait a minute. Didn't the president kind of waive all that by publicly attesting to the fact that he was born there publicly on White House stationery with a big ceremony? And they said, oh, and then they go back to citing, well, HIPAA, you know, we can't say it goes to HIPAA. You know they're covering up.
Of course they are.
But they don't want to get caught in making something up that they could get caught on later if the truth ever comes out. Like, yeah, he was born here. That's why they haven't erected a commemoration to his birth there. Because he wasn't born there. I don't know where he was born. I'm not going to say he was born in Kenya because I don't know. I know he gave us a counterfeit birth certificate, and therefore I cannot rely upon anything it says.
Yeah.
Nothing. I don't know where he was born. I don't believe he was born there. You showed me a counterfeit birth certificate. Even if everything on it is actually true, I can't rely on it because it's counterfeit.
Well, it doesn't matter. He could have been born in bumfuck Egypt or on the moon, for that matter. The fact is that he was not a natural-born citizen. Your both parents said he wasn't born.
So he wasn't. That's hiding in plain sight.
Yeah, plain sight.
Hiding in plain sight.
Correct.
He's not a natural-born citizen.
Yeah, I just brought
But given the fact that he's a liar about all of those things, it's entirely possible he was born to an American father. Maybe he had an American father. We don't know. But he thought being an exotic son of a goat herder from Kenya would play big with silly white suburban women in Hyde Park, Chicago, and in the suburbs of Chicago. So he played that out for all it was worth until he decided to run for president. And for like 7 years, his book publicist was saying that's where he was born. Because it played well with silly white women in suburbia.
Yep. Well, I not to change the subject, but I had asked Joe Gibson how his campaign is going, and he called in, and I brought him in. He's on the phone now. How are you, Joe?
How's everybody going?
Huh?
I said, how's everybody doing?
We're doing good.
How you doing, Joe? Who's that? With the raspy voice. Is it Chewbacca?
With nah, I was trying to sound like him, so you'd ask him who it was.
With the kitty cat crew? The black kitty cats?
Yeah, man.
How you doing, Joe?
I'll never go on that show again. I'll tell you that right now. I'll never go there again. He flat yeah. out disrespected me and lied, you know? And I don't have no room for liars like that, you know?
I understand.
He came on my show and promised me, you know? Promised me that he wasn't going to pull that crap. And then he got that guy to do that crap, so, you know. And then I couldn't get a word in edgewise, Sarge. He had that girl talking, and she was just talking utter nonsense, you know.
Just
she's
babble,
entitled
babble,
to everything.
Babble, babble, babble.
Slavery ended in the 1980s, guys, by the way. Slavery ended in the 1980s, according to them.
Well, wait, that's an improvement, because they say it never ended because of the 13th Amendment, and it provides over slavery if you've been convicted of a crime. They say it never ended.
Oh,
well,
we're boy.
Getting somewhere. That's an improvement.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing, Joe Gibson? How's everything?
It's good. It's good, Mr. Bianchi.
This is Bianchi. I got in a fight because a guy called you a no-good son of a bitch, so I had to punch him.
Really? Seriously?
Throat. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I see you don't call a friend of mine nothing like that.
Right, right. Oh boy,
hey, look,
I tell you,
I
boy!
I told you and Sarge to stay away from over there. Now you go back, you go went over there. Now you're coming back mad.
No, I know. You warned us. You did. You honestly, Bianca, you were right. I should have stayed away. You're right. I never learned my lesson,
man. Bianca taught me a lesson with that woman I was on with another show, an activist, and man,
yeah,
she wasn't tolerating no dissent, and Bianca was. Bianca, his instinct is she must have been sounding a rattlesnake because Bianca said, well, he wasn't going to make any comments. He was going to sit back and listen a little longer. I walked right into a trap, man. I spoke my mind, gave my opinion reasonably and respectfully. I even complimented her on some of her efforts. But then I got to talk about the prison population and how hard it is to keep them in line, keep from murdering each other and assaulting each other. And,
yeah.
Boy, she went off.
Wow.
Yes,
she talked
about
your
mama. She talked about your mama.
I had to get nasty,
wow.
But then we got it on then. Me and her got it on then. I said, wait a minute. I ain't just said nothing whatsoever to warrant this kind of response for you. Nothing. And, man, we were going back for a while. Then I told the host, I said, okay, it was like Brother Warren on steroids. I told the host, I said, okay, I can see I cannot have a productive conversation with this woman. I think I'll just drop out.
Yeah, yeah. You can't. You just can't talk. Have no conversation. There's no conversation whatsoever. I just realized that. It was like there was no – they just – and then I was getting muted. He kept muting me, you know, and I was just like, oh, just forget it, you know. And then the guy just started insulting me. Well, he started insulting the Alaskan first because he said, you know, I'm not going to say the word and everything, but he said it in context. Like he should, and then what he did was he pacified him, and he said it over and over and over and over again like a dig, you know, like I could speak it. You can't, you know. That's when I jumped in. I said, oh, no. He doesn't need your permission to speak, and neither do I, you know.
You're right.
You know,
that's an exercise in power, arbitrary power, and that's what I hate about people using the, quote, N-word, unquote.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an exercise in power. Thou rules for thee, but not for me. And that's what leftists do with everything.
Yep.
Not just that word.
Everything. Everything. You can't question anything. You can't question the Holocaust. You can't question nothing. Oh, well,
nothing.
Speaking of which, they got this organization in North Carolina, caucus, actually. They put out a statement, actually, a press release. If I could get it, I don't know. I sent it to Lorianne, actually. I don't know if I can get it up or not. I'll try to read it. But basically, they want to, if I'm elected in North Carolina here, hang on. Turn it back. Somebody has some background noise. If I'm elected here in North Carolina, that they're requesting the Republican Party not to recognize me, I guess they have choices. You know, they have preference over what the voters say, and what they say goes. You know, so I'm gonna try to pull it up here if I can. I'm gonna have to go to the Facebook get it, but you gotta listen to this. What they say? Oh boy. This is insane.
Well, look,
I mean,
Joe, make sure you're familiar with the House rules, and I'll make sure you look at all the precedents in the House rules And what they might be able to do it under the House rules, and I'm not saying that they can't. If the Constitution of North Carolina says they can make their own rules up, and that's one of the things they're allowed to do, then they can. But just make sure you're familiar with all of it before they get away with it.
Yeah, no, under North Carolina Constitution, they can't do that. As long as I meet the qualifications of office and I'm elected by the people, there's nothing anyone can do unless I go out and I commit a felony. You know, if I commit a felony, then they have to, then I disqualify myself. But other than that, now they could try to make me resign. They could, say, yeah, I need to resign, have protests or something. But I don't think they would do that. They won't go that far. Not the Jewish caucus. They're not that big. They're not that big where they have that much power. Now, if I was down in Charlotte or something, or maybe even, New York City or something, forget about it. I'd be all done, if that be the case. I don't know. I just don't know how much – I don't think they hold that much weight.
Well, the only reason I brought it up, Joe, was because in the U.S. House of Representatives, it simply says that the Congress simply has to take a vote of two-thirds to expel any member. And it doesn't reason, a qualification as to why they can. Now, I don't know if North Carolina has a similar provision in the House rules or not.
Okay, well, this is what the North Carolina Democratic Party Jewish Caucus says. See, I'm not even in their party, but this is what they say. A neo-Nazi podcaster named Joseph Gibson III has been cleared to run in the Republican primary for the State House seat of District 65, which encompasses Rockingham County. There had previously been a challenge to his candidacy brought by local Rockingham Republican on the grounds that he was convicted felon. However, the State Board of Elections has unanimously ruled that he's eligible to run, having completed his parole, which is a lie. The most pressing issue about Mr. Gibson is not that he is a parolee, another lie. I'm not a parolee. So that's right there. I got him right there. It's that he has stated an affinity for Hitler and has been described by the neo-Nazi National Socialist Movement as one of our members. His podcast features regular diatributes about Jews and every other minority group. And terrifyingly, he received thousands of votes from the Republican primary voters last time he ran in 2022. We applaud the small number of individual Republicans like State House staffer Stephen Wiley and the Rockingham County Chair Diane Parnell who have spoken out about Mr. Gibson and condemned his Nazi ties, which they have not done. But condemnation of Nazism within the party should be the rule, not the exception. It must be institutional, not individual. It should not have taken 2 years for Republicans to begin speaking out about this, just as it should not have taken 6 years for a Republican candidate to condemn Mark Robinson's record of Holocaust denial after those comments were unearthed in 2018. If the Republican Party is serious about combating anti-Semitism, it is time for them to prove it. We call on the state's Republican leaders, Party Chair Michael Whatley and Speaker Tim Moore, to issue, number one, issue a formal condemnation of Joseph Gibson's candidacy, and number two, to declare that they will refuse to seat him in the Senate legislature should he win the election. Failure to do so will be viewed by the Jewish community of our state as an admission that the GOP can tolerate Nazi ideology. So as long as it gets them one additional vote in the state house. In 2018, when the NC GOP had another Nazi candidate, previously Chairman Robin Hayes, did disavow him, we're disappointed that newer Republican leadership has not yet had the courage to do the right thing this time. For us, the race is painfully similar to the Republican primary for State Attorney General in 1979. Harold Covington, the leader of the National Socialist Party of America, won a majority of Republican votes in 45 out of North Carolina's 100 counties after hosting an event called Hitler Fest. When asked how he did so well despite his Nazi ties, he asserted that there are many closet Nazis in the Republican Party. We look forward to the North Carolina Republican Party demonstrating that Mr. Covington's assertion doesn't ring true today. So that's what they're saying. That's their official press statement as of February 1st. Yeah.
Yeah, I wish those people were as diligent about weeding out communists as they are Nazis. I think they're equally as bad. But they don't seem worried about communists.
This is a fight now that can show for freedom, because this could be spun, actually. Who are they? that as a caucus party and an opposite party to declare who the voters should pick in their county to represent them, or in the state for that matter. Who are they? Based upon what? The lies? They call me a parolee. I'm not on parole. What are they talking about? I'm not on parole. I've never been on parole. I was on probation back 30 years ago. What are you talking about? You know? The other one there, I'm a member of the NSM. We know I'm not a member. I have shows where they threaten me and tell me I'm not a member. Sorry, you remember that. So what are you talking about? Where are you getting this proof? You know? So this is just crazy. It's insanity.
Them Jews been doing that with blacks forever, picking their leaders and telling them this, that, and the other. That's just the way they are.
Yep, that's right. I think I can get the NAACP maybe to help me out on this one, too, and maybe side with me, because you're right. They've done this to the black community, too.
These are the same people that are attacking your lieutenant governor, right?
Yep.
Mark Robinson.
Mark Robinson. Yep. Yeah, he's running for governor, by the way. Yeah, he's the same people. Yeah, same thing. They're attacking him. Yeah, and he's a black guy, you know. And he supports me actually. Me and him have had several conversations over the past few weeks, so he supports me. So if he wins governor,
I thought any time you attacked a black politician, it was only because you were a racist. Isn't that what Fannie Willis said?
Yeah.
Yep.
So they're racist. Yeah. This Jewish caucus is racist. Yeah.
They must be, got to be, by definition, their own definition.
Yeah.
You attack a black politician, you got to be a racist.
Well, look who funds them, Sarge. George Soros and this gambling tycoon. I forgot his name here. I had it written down. This gambling tycoon. So it all ties back to my stance on gambling, and that now they're running with it. They're running wild with it, and they're just going to slander me and destroy me. You know, and then they got that Nazi crap in it there with it. So that's how they were able to, you know, do this. But it's backfiring. People are liking me more based upon what they're saying. They don't know what they're doing. You know? I mean, they don't.
They're not getting the Donald Trump lesson, are they?
No, they're not. That exactly. Thank you. You're right. You know, they're not learning from Donald Trump. The more you attack the guy, the more they like him because they see the bullshit. You know, and that's what it is. People are tired of that crap, that race guard crap, and that
people have got to see the attack as being just. If people see the attack as being unwarranted and not just, they're going to reject it. That's what they're doing with Donald Trump. To some extent, that may be what they're starting to do with you. They see the attack on you as being spurious and unfounded and unfair and attempt to knock you off the ballot rather than let the voters decide.
Yeah.
And that doesn't weigh good for a lot of people.
Yeah. People like their votes. When it comes to voting, people are very – that's the most precious part of our republic, you know, the right to vote, you know. I mean, to have your say. When you say we don't have a say anymore, then you're pushing the card for revolution. You can't do that. You know, we all have a say. We all have a right to have a say, you know. It's wrong from what they're doing. You know, it really is. So that's what's going on. I'm going to try getting together with about five other people Sunday. I'm going to do it Sunday, but then we were going to do it Sunday, but I said, no, we can't because it's church day that day for down here. So we're going to try to do it tomorrow afternoon starting at 1 o'clock. We're about five of us. We're going to work the phones and take another poll. We're going to call like 500 registered voters and take a poll and talk to them. And then this time maybe influence them, you know, and then let them know that they're representing me. And see where I stand here in these in the district, because early voting starts next week.
Mm-hmm. And here's the deal. You mentioned Fannie Willis, Sarge. The more she digs in, the more things are going to come out about her. That's the problem with these people. They don't understand how things work. You know, the more they dig in against Joe, and the more they dig in against Trump, you know, the more things come unravel for them, you know.
Yeah.
That's what's happening here, you know.
Well, it's like I said earlier, you know, like, look, see, the one thing about these people, like in Fulton County, which is all rats, 100% rats, and they all live in an echo chamber. Everything they say is reinforced by everybody else,
They can't. They don't think anybody else really opposes them. They live in an echo chamber, and you know what? That backfires on them. She didn't seem to realize that you take on a president of the United States who got 74 million to 75 million votes at least, that there won't be millions of eyes on the case you're bringing against them, and a great deal of those voters, to say even people who didn't vote for them, think that the charges are simply not just or warranted. So you would think that you would have all your affairs in order before you even think to bring such a case, knowing the kind of scrutiny is going to be brought against you, your whole team, your entire office. Everything's got to be in order. And she's got one of the funkiest houses, prosecutorial houses, I've ever seen.
Yeah. Well, I got in today, actually. I got 750 postcards in today. Oh, man, these are beautiful, man. I designed them real nice, man. Vote for Joseph Gibson. I got Appeal to Heaven. Will you join me at the bottom? Oh, it's just awesome, the design, man. So I'm going to be mailing those out. And, because I think the direct mailing is really – you know, even going out and interacting with local businesses, it's hard. You walk into a business, they got customers, you know. You got to be careful how you interact with people, you know. So so that's why I think the direct mail is really good. People get letters in the mail from me. They know where I stand. I'm on social media. I email people, you know. I think that's the best way to communicate. And now call them, you know, and talk to them on the phone. Like you said, Sarge, that means a lot to them, you know.
Yeah,
definitely.
Well, you know, one of the things I've noticed, and living in a leftist state, I can see when change starts to happen. If you're in a conservative state where they really don't, you know, nothing much changes because you continue going the way you're going. But here in New Mexico, it's been really iffy. If you decide that you're going to walk outside like a 6 months ago, walk outside with a Trump t-shirt, you're likely to get shot. And I got one the other day. Somebody sent it to me, and it has Trump with that picture that was for his arraignment or whatever. The mug shot. Got a picture of that, and it's above it. It says wanted, and underneath it says for president. And I wore that to Walmart. And I only have one person give me a bad look. I had a lot of people saying, great shirt. And that kind of surprised me. And
The most popular shirt, Robert, I ever wore that had a slogan on it that got the most likes, that where people would just come up to me and shake my hand, was I had a shirt that said Veterans Against ISIS.
Yeah.
Veterans Against ISIS. Everyone loved it, man. They were like, oh, I love that shirt, man. You know, I mean, it was like, so that was the shirt that got the most. I mean, everybody would come up to me, you know.
Yeah, that would sound
neat. It's the same way with my Fuck Biden hat. Go up there and shake my hand, man, just right on. You're right. Absolutely. Yep. I only had one person that tried. You got a little smart with me. I just opened my shirt up, and I was wearing my 357 at the time. Walked off. They're cowards. These people are cowards.
Yeah.
Got a big mouth, and they want to run their mouth, but when it really comes down there to, hey, you want to do something about it, they run off like little pussies.
Yeah.
They hang around.
It's hilarious.
You know, BLM and Antifa are nothing but cowards. They have to hang around in crowds. Or else, if they don't, they're not gonna. You can take on one of them at a time, but if you're one guy and you're trying to take on 30 guys, 40 guys, you know, they're cowards.
Yep,
they're cowards.
You know, and it's just like Fannie Willis is a fucking coward.
Oh yeah. You know, and they're big on talk until things start going in a different direction, and then they get quiet, just like crickets.
Yep. They're all loud at first, but when it comes down to the nitty gritty, okay, they're cowards. They turn and run like little fucking little sissy boys is what they are, you know. You see these on YouTube, you know, like these wannabe gangsters and bangers and all this shit, and holding their gun sideways. Man, you start shooting them son of bitches, they'll shit in their pants and they'll fucking run like a damn scalded dog.
Yep.
They can't handle it. You know, they can't do it.
And I don't like people playing the race card. I don't like people playing the race card. I think that's just a bunch of nonsense. And on both sides, I think it's just nonsense. And it's wrong. You know, I mean, get over it already. Knock it off. You know, we know who the scumbags are off of society, whether they be black or white. We know who they are. We know what ghetto scumbags are out there. We know who are the bottom dwellers are. You know, it doesn't matter what color they are because they're all coming all shapes, creeds, and colors. You know.
Well, that too, but Joe, there's one side that plays the race card more often, and we know which side it is. I mean, we saw it in Atlanta when Fannie Willis appeared at that church, right, Sarge?
I don't know what happened at the church. I didn't see it.
Oh, she.
Yeah,
she
what was that question again? I didn't hear the question. Okay. Say it again.
I said there's one side that one side of the aisle that uses the race card more often, and I gave the example of when Fannie Willis appeared in that church and said what she said.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, that's one of the most glaring iniquities in politics today. Now, it's understandable because, after all, the church was the focus of a great deal of black political involvement. It was a community center where black people go to organize and receive inspiration mm-hmm. and knowledge. So it's understandable how it started. But the problem is that it runs afoul of laws that prohibit politicking from the pulpit while you claim to be a 501(c) organization. You're not supposed to have it both ways, but the problem is the federal government turns a blind eye to it when it happens in a black church, and that's just not right. Now, they can forego the 501(c) status, and they can do all the politicking they want, but the problem is they want to have their cake and eat it too, and that just ain't right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's the thing. Now, granted, they'll come back at you and say, well, what about the Black Robe Regiment back in the Revolutionary days? Well, that was different. That was a little bit different. They were politicking. A lot of, you know, people don't understand what happened back then. The two things that had
well,
to happen.
Well, we didn't have a 501(c) statute either, so it wouldn't run afoul
right.
anything. Everybody was politicking from churches back then.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, and that's the thing. And that's why when the British came to start the war, one of the first things they did was try to shut down all the churches, you know, because
yeah.
That's right. And but like I said, they can forego that tax exemption.
Yep.
If they want to politic, you at least be intellectually honest enough to do that instead of trying to claim both of it, you know. You can't serve two masters anyway. That's what they taught you in the Bible.
Well, you know, anyone can challenge a tax exemption when they're up for expiration and renewal. IRS allows input from the public and challenge it. And you can warn them. Go to the church and say, I need a copy. They got to give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And tell them that you don't like the way they're doing this, that, or the other. It may help them to stop it.
Right. But as far as Fannie Willis goes, I mean, look, this woman, if she's got to, I mean, I would say she has to understand that the more she digs in her heels and tries to stay on this case, you know, the more likely that this case is just gonna dissolve, which is already dissolving, but it's gonna dissolve because she's there. You know, there's a possibility that if she steps aside and they put in another possible liberal DA, that the case might go on, but as long as she's there with all her problems, I mean, really, are you gonna tell me that she can't see? Well, maybe it's not that she can't see it. She doesn't want to see it. She's blind.
Well, you see what a judge turned down, that redistricting line that they drew in Louisiana?
Yes, I saw that.
Well, wow, look at that on the map. It looks so silly.
It does.
You know, I don't understand.
I mean, I saw that map, and that's the thing. And that was Gary Graves' big thing, because it was going to take away his district, part of his district.
Yeah, it does. And Blackstead moved way the heck up in northern Louisiana. They didn't want to live down South Louisiana. South Louisiana is practically all black in New Orleans. They don't want to be down there with all their crime. That's why they moved. They moved on their own volition, probably enjoying their life. And here all of a sudden comes this line and a notice in the door. Well, you are in Cleo Fields district now.
Yep.
Yeah, fucking bag of cash. You know? And if you haven't heard that story, I can tell it. Because that guy, at one point he was in the legislature, and he got caught on camera accepting a flat-out bag full of cash, a paper bag full of cash in some park in Baton Rouge, you know? So,
where was I at?
Where was you at? You missed that one, Joe.
Yeah, Joe, he missed that one. Nah, there are a lot of freaking things that have happened here in Louisiana. Bag of cash, Cold Cash Jefferson, who goes trying to get cash out of his freezer during right after Katrina and all that shit. You know, we actually had a governor that married a fucking stripper. You know, down here. So yeah, and of course, Edwin W. Edwards, who once famously said, "How do you say this? As long as it's not a dead girl or a live boy, I'm good. You don't catch me with a dead girl or a live boy, it's good." You know, that's how things run down here. And Pianchi knows this.
Well, you know, I'm kind of new down here, but I like it so far. But yeah. I moved down here because my grandson started school in 2016, mm-hmm. I think it was. But I like it down here. You know, Missouri is red, but in the area of North County, it's blue is the sky. But I like Louisiana. Well, one thing,
I'm surprised. You know, I'm surprised that all this, you know, Scalise continues to get elected in that New Orleans district, you know, being that New Orleans is a big blue.
So when he put out his campaign information, he probably don't have his picture on there.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. He wasn't there to vote against that bill because he was taking cancer treatments. And the other guy voted against, well, no, it wasn't the bill. I think it was either the bill or it was the possible impeachment of Mayorkas or something, you know, and he wasn't there. And so they had to kind of, you know, do some things, and there was a guy that voted against it, but he voted against it for a tactical reason that you vote, you get that one vote against it, and you can bring it up again at a later date, and when everybody's there to vote for it or against it, you know, and we'll see what happens with that, but, you know, it is what it is.
Well, they play politics with down there everything nowadays. Always some favorite. Hey, that gets back to the thing on Holland, all them congressional elected officials, they need to be paid by the state they work for. They was elected in.
Mm-hmm.
It will allow a little bit more transparency.
Yeah, it would allow more transparency. It wouldn't stop them from, you know, accepting bribes and shit, but, you know, I don't know if we can.
They accept their bribe. They're going to have to put it in the bank. They can't put them in the freezers no more. We know the look in there.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Yep.
You never know what they keep in those freezers.
You're right.
But what got that guy caught is he used a freaking deuce and a half to go get it. In fact, he used a military vehicle that was supposed to be being used to patrol or go help people out in New Orleans. He pulled strings to get that vehicle to go buy his house to go get that damn money.
Hang on just a second.
Yes.
That was William Jefferson.
Yeah, he was taking bribes from Nigerians, so the story goes.
Huh.
But that's what they do when they go up to them positions, man. You know, we talk about it all the time. And the money going to these countries and the money going to these wars, and Ukraine, Israel, and Pakistan, all that money comes back around. And there's no way you can find out. They come up with some damn excuse, table this, you got to go to committee, ain't enough votes.
Yep. It's... I don't know. It's really strange, but you know, it's like every time they get caught doing something wrong, everything's fine. Nobody's gonna indict them for anything. But all we have to do is say, "Hey, we love America and we want to do what we can to save America." They'll come after you with all guns blazing.
Well, it's gotten to that they can tell on each other. So when you when it gets to that point, everything goes.
Yeah, that's for sure. Oh, boy.
The hell, a hell of a conscience, the way they do in American federal politics, especially the way they spend money and keep kicking the can down the road. Man, do you realize how better off we would be if we didn't have to pay all these damn taxes and the fees for this, that, and the other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how long have they been kicking that can down the road, man? It's just like I remember being a teenager thinking that they got to stop kicking that can down the road. It's going to catch up to us one day. Well, that was 30, 40, 50 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
In all these wars. You got your echelon. They want to get into the markets there in Russia and there in the Middle East. That's what they want. They want to move the power players out that's there now so they can have access to those markets, have McDonald's and Burger King's
and Walmarts and all that everywhere. That's why they use the politicians the way they are. McCain said we need to support Syrian moderates. Well, what the hell is a Syrian moderate? Is that from the difference between an extreme and a low level?
Yep.
Need to leave those people the hell alone.
Right.
Absolutely.
Non-intervention.
Oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you guys. You hear that the Fannie Willis forced the U.S. Marshals to hand deliver her a House Judiciary subpoena to her personally because she refused to acknowledge it over email. So they had to go find her ass and hand it to her personally. Because they wanted documents about misusing federal funds related to her indictment of Donald Trump. She wouldn't accept the subpoena after it was emailed to her. So they had to go track her ass down and hand her the subpoena personally and say, you are now served.
Yep. Kind of makes
it
you wonder.
It was the law. If it's Steve Bannon, boy, they'd have hauled her away in handcuffs or something. Steve Bannon or Roger Stone or Peter Navarro or any of them other guys. Oh, hell no. Fannie Willis? Well, she's a Democrat.
Or come and knock on her door about 5 in the morning and wake everybody up and then haul them off in handcuffs.
Well, I'm telling you, man. These people
guys, it is corrupt. But again, guys, it's not hypocrisy. It's hierarchy. They're in power and you're not. And just because they're in power, you know, they get a chance to refuse a congressional subpoena.
They're not even asking her to appear. They're asking for documentation. They haven't asked her to appear yet. I'm sure at some point they're going to ask her to appear after they pour through the documents. But right now it's just a request for documents. It's not a request for her to appear before the committee. I'm telling you, man.
This is my point, Source. She's digging her feet in, and the more she digs her feet in, the more this gonna come after her. The more people are gonna come after her.
Yep.
The more she digs her feet in, the more. In other words, she's digging a hole, and she keeps digging. You know,
they're going to kick her under the bus, just like they did the mother one. The Kim Gardner in St. Louis, they kicked her butt under the bus. When she prosecuted. when she prosecuted Eric Greitens, who had just been elected Republican governor of Missouri.
Yeah.
And she supposed to have had some pictures of a new woman that had passed out in the hotel with Greitens, and he took them. Well, in the end run, she never had no pictures.
Well, that's kind
of
like...
Well, I'll tell you, there are millions of eyes on this thing. She better start acting like there are millions of eyes on this because there are millions in every country on the planet and certainly here in the United States. They are scrutinizing everything to make sure all the eyes are dotted and the T's are crossed, and they're looking at her background and her entire office. It's astounding to me that she bought this kind of thing and didn't think she was going to come with her in this scrutiny. It's just astounding to me that she wasn't prepared for any of this, apparently. I mean, that's how self-assured, hubristic, arrogant and that they are. They just don't think anything bad can happen to them as long as they take the right ideological and political positions.
Yep.
Well, hell, she just had to go to that church and start talking about racism and white supremacy and the evil old white man. That's what she's going to say when she's going there. That's where she's going to get her nourishment from. That same old rhetoric. Womack uses. They always go to the dang-dong black church and start whipping up. You know, I'm going to tell you, some of these black folks need to be multi-billionaires. They got these time machines that you can go back to the 1800s, 1400s, 1500s, I like to have a time machine like that.
But yeah, that should be nice.
And think about this. You have freaking, what's his name up there in New York?
Greg.
The so-called pastor up there.
Sharpton,
who's a multi-millionaire. I guarantee you, Jeremiah, right before, as he was retiring, he's a multi-millionaire, you know. All these race hustlers, racist preachers who promote this stuff, who promote, like, liberation theology, you know, that type of stuff, they're multi-millionaires, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, Obama spent, what, 10 years at Jeremiah Wright's church?
That's where he learned about black people. He learned their sensitivities. They learned their talking points. He didn't know that. That's where he learned it from.
Yeah.
And the other thing he learned from there is it's not God bless America, it's God damn America. That's what he learned from there too. You know? That, and then of course his grandpa, when he was younger, he lived, and I don't know if his mother didn't want him at that point, but he had to live with his grandparents up there in, I believe, Washington State, I believe, and Obama went to this Little Red Schoolhouse thing. Well, the Little Red Schoolhouse is a sort of communist thing, or was a, I don't know if it's still open or not. But yeah, the Little Red Schoolhouse is a communist, or was a communist. They talk communist, you know, orthodoxy, you know, in that schoolhouse.
Yeah.
So really that guy, Obama, had no chance to be a normal American. When you're flittering around with, when your mom is flittering around with who she was flittering around with, and then her parents are talking about, you know, the Little Red Schoolhouse, putting him in that, and then he spends all his fucking time with people like Jeremiah Wright, Father Flicker, and what's his name that was with the Weather Underground, Bill Ayers, you know. He had no shot.
Yeah, I was looking at an article a little while ago, and I'm trying to find it again, but it had something to do about, here it is, had to do with Sharpton, and the headline on it says that Sharpton, special counsel Hur's political report clearly trying impact on an election. So I guess it didn't go the way he wanted it to, so he's coming down on it now. But,
hey, Noah?
Yep.
A text message. Noah, I'm going to send you a text message to tell you that.
Yep.
Well, see, Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, they're power brokers. And
yep.
What they do, they can deliver X number of black votes for a particular party in this case, because they have the ability to assemble and capture the ears of a lot of black people. And generally in the church, where it's more organized and actually civilized, really. Now, when you take other groups, like your Angela Davis, for instance, they ain't going for that. The people in the church ain't, they don't know nothing about no damn communism.
Yep.
But your Angela Davis type, they know the Marxism. They know the communism. They know that. And the two don't get along. For real. They don't get along. The people in the civil rights movement with King and them did not get along with the people that was espousing black power. I tell you another person didn't, Thurgood Marshall. He didn't get along or have any favoritism toward those that was crying black power.
Yeah.
Andrew Young, Maynard Jackson, they didn't want to have anything to do with Stokely Carmichael and them, the Black Panthers. And they surely didn't want to have to do with the Nation of Islam.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So
you got to ask yourself, all these groups up there, pulling and fighting every which way. This one's got the right idea. This one's got this idea. You know, you say, why do they believe this? You know, why do they have these beliefs? You know, that's what I always look at. You know,
because
what is the right way?
It works when they try to sell it. You know, the Civil Rights Act, the Civil Rights Movement was sponsored by white corporations. You had about 99 of them that was a member of the Tectonic, T-E-C-T-O-N-I-C Corporation that was led by Stephen Currier, and his wife was Audrey Mellon of the Mellon Foundation.
Huh.
99 white corporations, including Ford Motors and others, they put up $1.5 million for all the six, what they call the Big Six, the Pullman Porters, Southern Leadership, Christian Organization, NAACP, Urban League. Well, they didn't have no money.
Yeah. Yep, there you go, yeah. Talk about that money, man. Always at the root, at the bottom of the barrel somewhere, or at the top, wherever it is. It's in the barrel someplace. It's about that money. Without that money, you can't do nothing.
Wells Fargo donated, I don't know, I think it was either $50 million to the NAACP. It might have been more. And hell, it was named as a defendant in a reparation suit. Wells Fargo, CSX Railroad, and some others. It didn't go no place, but they give tax donation, of course, to that organization. If they didn't, it would fail. It almost went broke here about a decade and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, parts of that organization, like the legislature, well, the not the legislature, but the one that covers lawsuits and things, they do a pretty good job. But the rest of it, no. They're against school choice. They don't say nothing about abortions. They put out crazy information like telling blacks don't travel through certain states because you're liable to get killed by white police, like Missouri and Illinois, I think Florida too, after DeSantis made the claim about the history that they're trying to put in the public schools.
Mm-hmm. I think that one of the things we need to start doing is just notice and realizing what the truth is, because so many people will just completely ignore it if it goes against what their party is.
Yeah.
And
I don't agree. I'll tell you what, most of the stuff the Republicans support, I don't support a lot of the stuff that they, you know, I don't agree with them. You know, I mean, simple as that. I mean, look at George Bush. He freaking, the government grew so much during his presidency. That guy was a maggot, you know?
Yeah.
and some of the stuff Clinton did, except for NAFTA. I mean, NAFTA was a disaster and destroyed a lot. But some of the things he did, I supported, you know. I mean, it's just the way it goes.
Both of them parties got their faults. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But the only reason I supported Donald Trump was listening to his town hall meeting on school choice, non-intervention, lower taxes. I never heard a president talk about giving parents school choice and vouchers.
Yep.
Well, see, when you say that, you don't made a lot of enemies from teachers union, urban NAACP. Blacks don't like, a lot of blacks, see, the common blacks, they know what they need and what they want. But the other ones, the echelon and that, no, no.
Yep.
So they don't want school choice, you're saying? You're saying the blacks don't want school choice?
The common blacks do, but those in the echelon that's making money off of it, that's earning a salary off of it, and they turn around and pay dues to the AFT and the NEA,
Okay.
Well, you got to remember, though, those that are in that upper echelon, kids are already in private school.
Yep.
Well, see, here's another thing, too. When you have blacks as educated, they don't fall for that Democratic crap, them programs and that, because they know how they do. You know, Tennessee, I'm against what Joe Biden is doing is paying off student loan. Hell, I paid for my kids' education, so what did that put me at?
Yeah.
You need reparations, Trump.
That puts you in the class of Trump.
Professional black people who have their kids in private school, for the most part, are invested in the Democrat Party and the left. That is why they're opposed to school choice, and they're all in for the public school agenda. Because, I mean, they are totally invested in it, either through relations, through some sort of contracting, actual members of the educatory class, alleged educatory class of the public school system, and they're literally invested in it. So they definitely are opposed, for the most part, to school vouchers, because they want to maintain this monopoly. They don't want it to go away.
Yep.
No, it pays them. They make money off of it. And they have an animosity for people that surely speak like me and Sarge. I've been listening to Sarge for a long time. I used to jump. I used to feel sorry for you, Sarge, back in the day. I say, they're jumping on this poor old man. but that's what they do.
Hey, don't worry about that. That doesn't kill you makes you stronger, man. Nietzsche was right about that.
Egg, I had a cap with Make America Great on it. I took a picture of it with me in it and put it on Facebook. Shit, you just heard all the words that was leveled toward myself. And then, see, blacks that feel that way, they can't speak out on the job because they get fired.
Yeah. But
something that happened to them.
Yeah, that's for sure. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I avoided getting fired, because I was going on Tom Rose's radio show on WLS 890 AM radio, the 50,000-watt flamethrower of the Midwest, and I was speaking of my opinions about Illinois government and everything else, and I was a reasonably well-known name in the Chicago area, in the Chicago area suburbs. I don't know how it is I didn't get fired, but I didn't, and I kept speaking in my mind. I mean, I did it in a manner that couldn't, whereas I couldn't be accused of being contemptible or saying things that were not true or border on libel. I was very careful about that. But I was very pointed, particularly on my boss, George Ryan, who went to jail, by the way, for selling illegal driver's licenses when he was Secretary of State. That's another Illinois governor who went to jail. He was my boss, and I was criticizing him the hell out of him for quite some time, especially when the scandal broke with him about, and he's a Republican, by the way, the scandal broke with him that he was selling licenses to illegal aliens, one of whom was driving a tractor trailer, and a big piece fell off of the truck, and was about to fall off the truck, and people were trying to warn him over the CB and the radio, and he couldn't speak English. He bought the driver's CDL license,
CDLE, a Class D license. He bought it illegally, and due to his not being able to understand English, the part fell off the truck where people could get it stopped, and a van full of people, eight people in a white van, ran over this part of the truck. It punctured the gas tank, ignited a fire. The van exploded and killed all eight people in the van. And that scandal led to George Rising getting indicted, convicted, and sent to jail.
Yep.
Wow.
And I was criticizing the hell out of him before all this went down. I said, his answers, when the scandal had just started to break, I said all of his answers were inadequate. He was being evasive and all this other stuff. I'm amazed I didn't get fired, truly.
Well, I tell you what, they have some crooked politics in Illinois, especially down in southern Illinois. They have one stretch of highway leading into St. Louis there on 55. Every year they have big highway contracts on there. Either painting the bridge, paving over, paved roads. And it was nothing but a big kickback scheme. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Down there on Route 3, where all the strip clubs were. Off 55 on Route 3, you had all the strip clubs. It ain't like you had more strip clubs in that area than throughout the whole nation. There on Venice, DuPo, nothing but strip clubs. Looking like Las Vegas.
Well, let me tell you something about the state of Illinois and its governors. Out of the last 11 governors we've had five of them been convicted of various crimes. Now, Len Small was the 26th governor, defrauded the state out of about $1 million. Otto Kerner, who was the guy who oversaw the Kerner Commission, remember after the race riots in the 60s? He was convicted of mail fraud. His prosecutor was a future Illinois governor named James Thompson. And Kerner got convicted of mail fraud, about 17 counts, conspiracy, perjury, all kind of other charges. Dan Walker got convicted of bank fraud and perjury. George Ryan got convicted of fraud and racketeering, like I said just a little while ago. And Roger Blagojevich, who I think to some extent was set up, was impeached by the Senate, removed from office by the state Senate, and then he got found guilty on 18 counts of corruption, including attempting to sell a United States Senator seat that Barack Obama had vacated when he was no longer a U.S. Senator after he was elected president. He got sentenced to 14 years in a joint. By the way, Donald Trump commuted his sentence when he got reelected. I think he might have been set up. But nonetheless, it's kind of startling to think that five out of the last 11 Illinois governors got convicted of crimes and went to jail. That's got to be a record for any state.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like the people of Illinois better take a better look at their candidates.
Yeah.
A gunslinger? What are you talking about, gunslinger? We got Pritzker, fat boy Pritzker, in the Illinois governor's mansion. They didn't learn nothing in Illinois.
Well, you know, they always had the mob in southern Illinois, too, along with the labor union with the Shoulders and the Michelsons. You know, you their enemy, you be driving down 55 and your car blow up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. But I'm telling you, man, fat boy Pritzker is about as bad as it gets. They just ain't got nothing criminal on him yet. Remember, Penny Pritzker is a transgender. He used to be a male. She's another arch liberal who contributes all kind of money to leftist NGOs and leftist causes. The two of them together are an abomination in Illinois politics and the influence of the left.
Well, they ought to find themselves a new or a honest trooper or something. And when Pritzker gets in the car and goes driving down the road, they ought to pull him over for being overweight.
I think
he
bust the weight scale at the weight truck weight station if they ever put him on that damn thing. That guy's immense.
Yeah, he's part of one of those big hotel chains. Either the Hyatt or one of the others. I can't think of it.
But look into his, quote, sister, unquote, his transgendered brother. I mean, the two of them, man, good Lord. Penny Pritzker.
Well, let me tell you this, right? Amazon owes me $292,000 in back royalty payments, right? I got a letter from the IRS saying that the SB, the bank or whatever, SB that Amazon uses, right? He got an account there with my name on it that says there's $292,000 in there, and Amazon won't give me my damn money. So I'm telling the IRS, so what are you trying to say? I got to pay taxes on that money that they never paid me? So Amazon might be in big trouble. Fraud. You know, tax fraud or something. I don't know what they're doing. But I opened up a can of worms the past couple of weeks with that. So.
Just keeping up.
Payment.
Yeah, just keep opening those cans of worms there.
Yeah. Well, they need to pay my ass. Let me tell you that. I mean, it's been a long battle since 2018. I've been fighting them, man, on this, you know, back royalties and everything. And they pay a little bit, and then they shut it down. You know, they close. You know, see, we got the corner. My dad and I got the corner on that royalty market back years ago when Amazon first opened up. We saw it coming, how people were going to make money on Amazon. And we got all our titles up there, claimed the public domain material, and started publishing on Amazon. And we were making 12, 15 grand a month, you know.
Wow.
And you know, and Amazon decided, well, these guys are a bunch of nobodies, man. They figured everything out. They figured out what the corporate execs couldn't figure out yet. They shut us down. And then they took all our royalties, but they left our stuff up there, and they're still selling it on Amazon all this time. You know, it's like, what the fuck, you know? And nobody will listen. Nobody. I mean, who do you call when you call Amazon? You're going to talk to somebody in the Philippines, right? I tell you, I apologize, and they don't know what the hell I'm talking about when I'm talking about royalties. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
They think I'm trying to buy a product, you know? I mean, it's just, it's frustrating.
Jeez. It's amazing what they get away with.
Yeah, eBay, Amazon, all them big freaking companies. Amazon bought out, it bought out all the smaller self-publishing companies. So if you had something published on, like, CreateSpace, you're screwed. Amazon says, oh, don't worry. We'll handle your transition of all your titles. Yeah, can't account closed, you know. That's it. You know, it's like, damn, people getting royal, you know, income, you know, every month. That's it. You're done. You're out of a job now. You're out of work. What are you going to do? Open up your own website? Nobody will go to it, you know. Capitalism by imperialism. You know, imperialism. That's what it is.
Sorry, that Penny Pitzer is a billionaire heiress to the Hyatt hotel chain. Her and I guess her brother, who's
right.
The governor. Ain't nowhere in the world you gonna overcome these people, man.
Yeah.
I mean, ain't nothing you can do unless they all just die off.
Kind of looks that way, don't it?
Nobody will listen to you. Nobody will help you, you know. Even when it comes, I think I just got screwed again now by another batch of money. My dad's life insurance. I think the lawyer I hired made a deal with the insurance company and fucked me, you know. You know, so it's like, you know, I'm the beneficiary, and all of a sudden he comes up with this person saying, oh, but somebody else listed as a beneficiary. This person that doesn't exist. I said, what are you fucking talking about? You know, my dad's got the same name as me. You know, I'm his firstborn son. I got emails from him when he was still, you know, still alive, saying that I'm his beneficiary. I mean, well, what the fuck is wrong with people nowadays? I mean, just wait. It's like everything is corrupt.
Yeah, and getting worse all the time.
Yeah, no justice. No justice. No answers, no truth, you know?
Oh, what was the
Well, after the Michael Brown thing happened, what was the one of the rallying cries? No justice, no peace, or something like that.
Yeah.
Hands up, don't shoot.
I don't like that one. I don't like that one. We don't surrender. You might as well shoot.
That hands up, don't shoot was a friggin' hoax.
Yes. All of the eyewitness confirmed Daniel Officer Darren Wilson's account, and so did the forensic evidence from the autopsy. So it was a lie. They lied. The NFL fell for the lie. All the stupid players in the NFL, hands up, don't shoot. They all believed it like it was the truth. All of them just, and Kamala Harris, all these rats just fell for it and repeated the lie over and over again. And then when the truth came out, as you would expect, they never retracted their opinion or apologized for it. They never do. They never will. Always keep up the con. No matter what, don't ever give up the con.
Yeah. You know, what happened with that police officer now with the Floyd case? What's going on with his case?
Well, people are trying to get it reviewed. And it's a problem because it's already been through the appeals court. They're trying to get either his sentence commuted or something, but there was definitely a miscarriage of justice done to that officer and all those other three officers, putting them in jail over the shit. The police chief perjured himself under oath, denying the training that was clearly in extant on the Minneapolis City website, on the Minneapolis Police Academy's training curricula. All of it was there. They denied it. He lied about it under oath. They misrepresented the pathology reports from the Armed Forces Institute, from the Andrew Baker, the Hennepin County Medical Examiner. I mean, everything about that trial was a complete miscarriage of justice.
Once they got you, no matter whether or not you
think he did something wrong and deserved it, even if you do, you cannot ignore the prosecutorial malfeasance and miscarriage of justice. It is evident. It stinks to high heaven.
Once you get locked up in there, you're done. I don't want to hear you. Once they got you, there is very, very slim chance you're getting out. You know, you got to stay out on the freedom. You got to stay out in the open to fight your case. Always remember that. If you get locked up, don't let them take you alive. If you know you're going away for life, don't let them take you alive because there's no fight. You can't fight. You're not going to win. You know, and the Patriots ain't going to break you out, that's for sure. So you might as well just be like the Bundys, you know, and Waco and Weaver. Just go all out, man. Go all out.
Yep.
Well, sometimes it doesn't seem as if justice delayed is certainly justice denied, and we can explicitly point to the fact that it is being denied a great many people today. Look at January 6th. January 6th is just the federal prisons are just full of political prisoners. Political prisoners everywhere. And now we see that the January 6th committee has deleted almost a terabyte of data. Deleted it after they were told by the incoming Republican House majority to preserve it. They just deleted it anyway to cover it up.
Yep.
Yeah, well, you know, that's it. I'll tell you what, I get elected. I'm going to tell you right now, I know it's a state level, but, you know, everyone that's in there, there's going to have to be a review committee. Something I'm going to have to put together where every case is reviewed individually and for wrongful convictions. And then there has to be a compensation bill. I don't like the one they got here in North Carolina. The governor has to sign off on them getting paid. Like these guys that have been there for 20 years, you know, they got to wait for the governor to pay them. Bullshit. I don't like that. You know, there has to be a citizen review committee, you know, that's independent, nonpartisan, non-biased, that reviews every case on a case-by-case basis, you know, and you give them a time frame. Each case, it takes, 30 days, 60 days, you know what I mean? Not that's years and years and years. Screw that crap. Time is money. Money is time, you know, and and money and stress is worth a life, you know?
Yeah. I just brought Joe from Montana in. He raised
his
Joe.
Hand. Yeah, hi, people.
I think I caught him by surprise.
Well, hey there, Joe.
Hey, Lorianne, how you doing?
Yo, Joe.
Yeah, and everybody else. How you doing?
All right. Well, you know, it's just that's one of the biggest problems that in this country, I think, at least from maybe it's from only my perspective, but I don't know how you guys feel, cause if anyone's ever been on the inside, but you're losing your freedom is a very, that is the worst thing that can happen to a person or a citizen, I think. And, you know, it has to be done right. You know, I think the way things are done today is barbaric. The prison system is overrun with it's out of date, out of style, and it just doesn't work anymore. And you know, get tough on crime don't work, let them loose don't work. There has to be another way of correcting the problems we have in society.
Hey,
22 slug in the back of the head.
He sounds like an assassin. Hey, Sarge. Sarge.
Mm-hmm.
You here?
Yeah, I always got to find my mute button because then I want to make sure
the 2017 election for the governor of Illinois, Pritzker spent $171.5 million of his own money. $171.5 million of his own money. God damn. See, it's nothing you can do with them. It's nothing. What you going to do with them? But look at him.
Yeah, I think the job pays $250,000 a year. That goes with the job pays. I'm not sure about the salary, but it definitely ain't anywhere near a million.
What do you have, gold signs? I mean, what the hell did you spend it on?
He's
a billionaire. He was a billionaire before he ran for governor. He was a billionaire already.
Yeah, but what did he spend the money on? I just don't understand. How could you spend that much? I don't get it.
Oh, man. Oh, wait a minute. When you wage a campaign like that, Joe, you put walk-around money in every precinct, in every district in Chicago. You got a Democratic apparatus that knows how to spread the money around and where to put it. I mean, I know where they spent it. They laundered a lot of it and everything else. Man, they probably violated all kinds of campaign finance laws, too, and just didn't get caught.
Well, they're paying for votes, buying votes.
Yeah.
No.
That's among the things they will do.
Yep.
I don't know, man. I just can't see anybody giving me money to go
if
vote for somebody.
That, if not that, they'll run the fucking buses to get them to the polls.
Yeah, but even that, how much does that cost? Well, I'm just trying to say the cost of things. I mean, airtime on TV and whatnot. I mean, buses and signs and radio ads and everything. I mean, how much could you spend? I mean, with you know,
a lot
it just
of money. They're buying people off. They're buying off, as Sarge was saying, precinct captains. They're buying off the people who are the election board officials. They're buying off everybody. They're buying posters. They're buying campaign slogans. They're buying bumper stickers. They're buying loyalty for $171 million. They're trying to get themselves into Congress's pockets as well. So anywhere and anybody that can be bought, they're spending that kind of money on.
Joe, you can't spend that money on bumper stickers and signs. It just doesn't. I'm going to tell you right now. It doesn't. You know, yeah, I could see paying people off and bribing people. Okay, that can cost that much. But you ain't buying campaign supplies with that money.
They're buying everything. $171 million is being legally and illegally in order for this guy to maintain his status. Everybody knows that. So they're not spending $171 million on bumper stickers. They're buying everything and anything, like I said, they can, including votes.
No,
probably,
they can't. That's against the law. That's against the law, like Sarge said.
What? Gogorovich was commuted, wasn't he, Sarge?
It's Illinois.
It's Illinois.
Yeah, Gogorovich was commuted by Donald Trump, wasn't he?
You got campaign staff,
You got Polster.
Yeah, he was commuted. Trump commuted.
You got buildings.
Well,
you, and all
there
that
it
shit.
Is there.
So you think only five to six people taking money? Anybody in politics, anybody in politics is taking the money. The fact that $171 million is something else. He probably spent more than that.
He probably put a lot of money into state office candidates' campaign fund too, so that the state candidate will talk him up also.
That's right. Endorsements. And then if you're buying endorsements, he's probably trying to buy the fact that he doesn't want to pay back in favors. So he's paying them cash, legally or illegally.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you have that, there's no chance then. There's no chance.
Well, that's welcome to America.
I don't buy that. I'm not having that. That's got to stop.
Yeah, but
that's
the problem
why you
is...
got. That's why Joe, you have to be happy about all these negative stories they're running about you in the press, because they're getting your name out there.
Yep.
And you're not having to pay for it.
It's like what was said about Hollywood a long time ago. Any publicity, even negative publicity, is good publicity. So I'm hoping, you should take advantage of it.
Well, I'm in this to win it, so this time around I'm letting you know that. So I'm doing everything I can. I know there's a lot of patriots out there that haven't done shit to help me that claim they were gonna. I'm gonna tell you that right now, So and when I do win, I'll be calling them out one by one,
Because
all that talk. I don't need fake people standing behind me in the fight now when I go to fight. Cause those are the ones that are gonna sell me out.
You got people who said they were gonna help you and they haven't.
Of course, Joe.
All right. Then you have to go after him.
I will. Let me win first.
No, you're going to have to go after him right now and get their help.
Yeah. How are you going to – what good is it going to do if you say, you're going to win, then you go after them? You need them now to help you win. If they say they're going to help you, then you have to hold.
If they're not helping, Joe, what good is it? Am I going to keep beating a dead horse? I got to move on. I got to keep moving. I got to keep moving forward. You know what I mean? While leaving behind,
Yeah, you don't beat a dead horse, but I don't know if you've spoken to them how many times and how much pressure you put on them. If they've said, I'll help you, Joe, and then they get off the phone, you don't do anything about it, then
I know.
You can't expect much.
I know. Now, believe me, I'm on it, Joe. I'm sleeping 2 hours a day, if that. I slept one day last week, about 9 hours. I didn't know where the hell I was, I'm doing everything I can. While we're talking, I'm filling out envelopes, stuffing envelopes, I'm doing everything I can.
That's the elbow grease that you got put in, if nobody's around, that you got to do it in order for you to get elected.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
I'm not complaining about that.
I know. It's not easy, and you have to do it. Unfortunately, you're doing it all by yourself. But, you got to get something.
No, I got
you got to work for it. Unfortunately, you don't have a crew. But if you did, it'd be easier. So you got to do it.
No, Joe, I have a few people that are helping me. I do have a few people that are helping me here and there. So, it's not full time, So there are people out there helping. It's not like I'm all by myself. It's just that, there's just, I haven't even got a silent crew out there promoting me behind the scenes, so doing that, and that's smart doing it that way too,
You need a public relations guy to get you more negative publicity.
Yeah, maybe, huh?
That would help.
That seems to work.
I know.
Seems to work. There's more people that like me more. They love me more, man.
Yeah. God. You got to pay some FBI guy to come after you and then write it up in the paper.
Yep.
Yeah, it makes me wonder sometimes that he's doing this on purpose to get me in there.
I didn't see that coming. If that's the case, I'd have my eyebrows raised.
Yeah, you never know. It's the world we live in, man. You know, deception. You got to be careful. That's why being honest and being truthful and fighting for what's right, you know, even that sometimes you got to wonder and you got to check the balances and the scales of justice and figure out, well, you know, am I really fighting for the right thing here? You know, because sometimes you never know.
Well, deceptive is the right hand of politics.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tricky thing, man. It's the first time I've ever done it, so you know, it's how people perceive me and talking to people. I've noticed talking to people, I got to be careful. I've always got to catch myself. If I say the wrong thing, bam, that could hurt me, you know. So I'm very, very careful when I'm out in public, you know, in my area and whatnot, you know.
Yeah, you got to stand what you got to stand up for. Even if it hurts people's feelings, you know, if you're against the casino, for example, and other people are for it, you know, you can attend to them diplomatically to find out why they're for it. And if they have good reasons, then you join them on the good reasons and just leave them alone on the bad reasons, you know.
Yeah.
Your presidential campaign.
Yeah. The majority, I mean, it's not even a majority, actually, that's against it. Everybody's against it, except for the politicians. I mean, that's weird. Nobody is really for it in my county. Nobody I've spoken to. I says, hey, it's a good thing, you know. The only ideas that came about was, why do they got to put it there? Why can't we put it, you know, like my idea, put it in the downtown city area where there's abandoned buildings. You know, we got to build the city of Reedsville, a whole shopping mall that's empty. Put it there. You know, why put it out here? That's, you know, a couple of people did say that, and I agreed with them. You know, hey, we'll do that then, you know. But it really doesn't do any good for the community, to be honest with you. It doesn't bring these glorious jobs that people claim, you know. And it does, in the end result, after years of study even, the Foxwoods Casino, the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut, it didn't do really the things that they said it was going to do for the budget, for the economy. So, you know.
Indians didn't benefit either. Everybody thought that Foxworth, Connecticut casino was owned by the Indians, but it wasn't. Half of it was actually owned by businessmen, and the other half, I think, was owned by Indians' interests, but I don't think they had a major voting block. So I don't even think the Connecticut casino was under their guidance.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, gambling, I just don't like gambling anyway because, you know, I think it breeds bad behavior. It breeds bad things. The house always wins. It's not like, you know, you're not going to get rich, you know. So it's just.
I play poker for a while, fairly high stakes, and I never considered it gambling because if you know what you're doing, you can win. But when you're talking about the house always wins, that's absolutely true. They would not put in slots, craps, and other games unless the odds were in their favor, even by as slim as 2%, because they know that the majority of people are going to continue putting money into the slots, continue sitting at the tables, continue putting money over there, and they know that in the long run, they're the winners. And there will come millionaires to come to the casinos.
Yeah. Yep. I got these stickers I bought, Joe. I got these stickers with the circle peel off stickers. I put them on every envelope. It says, "Vote no casino. Vote Joseph A. Gibson. Freedom should not be a gamble."
Yeah, I like that.
Casino.
Yeah, that one sticks.
Yeah,
freedom should not be a casino.
Yeah,
a casino should not represent freedom. Yeah, I like that because it does stick in my head. Yeah.
Yep.
Got to get them.
By the way, Robin, how's your eye? I haven't asked you in a long time. How is it?
Actually, they're both doing really well right now. My right one, I still have a little bit of a distortion in it because the retina is still going down, but I'm seeing things at a distance really good. It's up close that I don't see things because
the retina is slightly detached, right?
They don't focus, so I have to wear glasses when I look, like when I'm doing this, I have to wear glasses to be able to see what's being said in the chat room and things like that. But because if I take them off, it's all fuzzy. But
you know
what, they're doing real well.
You know that. Hey Joe, what's going on? Hey Robert, you know that co-host that be on Proof Show, Joanne? You know her?
Yeah, I don't know her, but I've heard her. Yes.
Listen, she went to Florida Eye and Laser Center. She was damn near blind. And they brought her back where she could see just as good as, you know, before anything down there in Florida. So you should check with her. She swears by this place.
Yeah. Well, I'm.
Because I don't know what you got already.
Yeah, one of the things that I noticed after I got this done was they've got a new lens out that automatically focuses. And I thought, well, hell, why couldn't they have gotten that before I got my surgery done? But everything seems to be working out really good, so I'm kind of glad for that. At least I can, you know, I can look up at the mountain now here and see the antennas on top of it, so I guess that's a lot better than I could before.
Oh yeah, now you can see the 5G towers. Okay.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Especially when they got snow and ice on them.
And that's a nice bioweapon delivery system of the 5G.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got actually, I think I've got Xfinity and they've got 10G, but I'm still using their 4G, so staying away from that stuff. Although it's all around me.
Yeah, it's all around everybody, regardless of whether they're using it or not. That that permeates everywhere we are. And that
everywhere we are,
goes through the walls. It goes through reinforced concrete. It goes through our bodies. Christ.
Yeah. It's something. And I kept when it first came out, that's the first thing I looked at was that, you know, the things that it'll do to the human body. And I thought, no, that's okay. And I kept trying to tell everybody, but they didn't listen to me.
No, and there was one person, I think she was a research scientist, and she said that there had been no studies on this, I think it's, they call it micro mini waves. It's on wavelengths that people haven't studied before. I think it might even be a brand new wavelength, and the effect that it has on the human body. And so they're still implementing it, you know, make the big bells, have them somewhat profitable in today's times.
Yep. But yeah, my eyes are doing okay right now, so I'm kind of happy about that. So the only thing that I'm having to get used to is like when I'm working, you know, I work at a cash register, and in order to see what's on that register, I have to put on my glasses. But when I look at the people, I have to take them off because they'll be fuzzy if I don't. So,
yeah. So that's not exactly my happy situation. Put them on, put them off, put them on, take them off, take them on, put them off.
I just wear them on top of my head, and then when I need them, I bring them down. When I don't, I put them back on top of my head.
I didn't know you had problems with both sides.
Okay. Yeah, well,
I've been living for years.
Yeah. Well, I had cataracts in both eyes, and they just replaced the lenses, so it's just fine and dandy with me. I can see really good distance in now, which I couldn't before. So. I can look at the moon and it's nice and crystal clear and everything, whereas before it was this big old fuzzy ball that was up there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, any kind of improvement's a good improvement. Everybody needs their eyes. I would rather be deaf than blind. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and they can actually, if you're getting deaf, they've got those ear things now that Rush Limbaugh had that connects into your skull or something.
The inner ear brain, the bone inside, yeah.
So even if you're deaf, you're not going to, you probably still hear things if you got that.
Mm-hmm. Deaf people actually dance by the vibrations that they hear through the floor, or that they feel rather through the floor. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's I guess you could dance to the vibration. That's never thought about that, but that's actually a pretty cool thought.
My biggest bugaboo nowadays is, of course, the economy is going to crash, something I predicted years ago when the pandemic started. But the immigration policy is just like it's a smack in the face.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, come on in, immigrants. One, a few billion dollars towards what does Pelosi call them? Customers, newcomers. Yeah, let's have more newcomers in here. So that's always my biggest thing. Hey, God. And then did you all see the video of the guy, the illegal who got arrested for beating up a cop along with some of his friends in New York City? He hasn't gone to trial yet, but he was arraigned. He got set out. Maybe not even that. He was freed on no cash bail, and he gives the finger when he leaves the building to the reporter to fuck America.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing where you wish you could see that on TV and then stick your finger in there and hit him in the eyeball and actually have him feel.
Yeah. Ooh.
Whoa. Have like 100 million people do that to him, and that would stop him.
What channel? Fuck. Saw that, I
go. What news reported that?
Huh? What, Joe?
Who reported that? Who reported that? Didn't give him the finger like that.
That was on Newsmax.
It was on the news.
Was on Newsmax, and it was on several other channels.
Yeah, they had a video of him doing it.
They had a video
both
of
fingers.
Him.
Yeah. And a smirk on his face.
Yeah.
Man, it was been a while since I wanted to smack somebody so bad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you got to remember, he was happy. Had he had done it back in his home country, he'd have been dead.
That's right. Or had his hands cut off. Either way. Yeah.
This was in New York, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it was after they attacked those cops, and then they were arrested and then released, and when they were coming out of jail, they were flipping off the cameras. So it's like, okay, what idiots.
You know you can't touch me, you fucking Americans. You can't touch me. I wasn't born in this country. I got more rights than you do.
Yep, that's the problem. Well, let's see. There was a couple of other things that I went and put the URL for that ad for Joe Gibson in the chat room. If you guys can pass it around, because it's actually on my site. That's one of the most seen things that I've put out there so far. So it's pretty cool. It's still not as high as I'd like it to be, but I've been telling people and.
Well, you got it up there posted, and it's getting a lot of views.
Yeah, it's actually most of my stuff has maybe 25 at the most views, and this one's almost at 100 now, so it's going up. That's constantly daily, so which to me is cool. So, and
yeah,
every time I get a chance, I put the URL out there for you know.
Yeah, man, that's good. I'll start promoting it a lot more too then.
Yeah, well, it's on Rumble, so it's theirs.
Yeah.
And I thought it turned out pretty good. I still
it's okay. Yeah, I like it. It's good. It's pretty good. I like what you did there. It's really good. You know, it's a simple video, and just you know, just shows the support, and that's good. You know, I wanted a couple analytical videos, but that's okay. That takes a little bit of work, and I know people don't have the time to do that. But you know, I wanted something. You know, went into you know, address the issues that we're facing. But you know, but yours is supportive. You know, and I like that. So.
Well, you know, when I was getting ready to do it, I was thinking of getting out my drone and doing stuff around here, and I started thinking, well, you know, having a photo or a video from Albuquerque, New Mexico really wouldn't do it. I found that one, and it was on the internet, and I thought, well, heck, there it is. That's just how absolutely perfect. It was a drone shot going around a flag over a looked like a military cemetery.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's good. It's good. But there's a couple. I got somebody else working on another video for me too. We're gonna try to get a patriot type of video out there. You know, talking about the issues. You know, maybe get a guy with a beard, you know, a woman with a beard. You know, and you know, we're gonna address all that, the LGBTQ controversy. You know, just like a quick 1.5-minute video, just boom, 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 boom. You know, shake people. You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, have the woman with the beard in a video and point to her and say, is this a man or a woman? Which is it?
Then you have
it's
to
America.
Ask, then you
it's
have
America
to ask,
today.
What's her face on the Supreme Court? She won't be able to tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there you go.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God.
No,
yeah.
Well, what is this tag? Yeah. Well, let's ask the Supreme Court. Oops, they can't tell either.
That was some question. Well, it all depends. Oh, yeah, well, I don't really know now. Yeah, up until your nomination, you knew what a woman was. Up until it was time for you to get ratified, all of a sudden, everybody becomes PC. It all depends. Yeah.
What they should have asked her after that was they should have said, what are you?
Oh, no, that wouldn't happen. No, that's a little bit too definitive.
Well, I would have asked.
I would have liked to have heard that answer. Are you a woman? Well, yes, I am. Well, you don't have a dick, so how can you say that?
Yep, that's for sure. But it's hard telling anymore. They've got like 65 genders now, so. I'm trying to figure out when they hit 100.
Yeah. Somebody wants to change, it doesn't bother me. It's the political pressure that is imposed upon us, especially with the pronouns. My pronoun is we and they, but it's not she and her. Yeah, you know, I thought you were a trans woman. No, it's we and they. Well, how about fuck and you? Because I'm not calling you we and they. You're a singular person. And you're lucky if I call you her.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, it's like every time I see somebody like some guy and he's dressed up like a woman, I say, hey, how are you doing, sir?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
well,
God.
Robert, I'm going to tell you, you know, actually it does bother me that someone with perfectly healthy sexual organs wants to pretend that they are born something other than, because I think that is a simple manifestation of mental illness. It's an obvious one. However, since I have no legal or ethical ability to stop them, they're free to do what they want. But here's what you must not do with regard to me. You must not demand that I celebrate it, because I will not. I will say, yeah, you got the right to do it. If you're an adult, go ahead and do it. But if you ask me to celebrate it, I won't. I'm going to feel sorry for you because I think you're mentally ill.
I do too.
And that's it. And anybody demands that I do, they don't have a fight on their hands.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of like when I left work today. I work at Office Depot, and just before I left, this guy walks in, and he wasn't dressed as a woman or anything, but he was just one. He just kind of wandered around the store, and then all of a sudden he stopped, looked at everybody, picked up a device that was like about $100, and just walked out of the store with it. And my boss said, well, we got a picture of him, that I went and followed him in my car. And I stopped, and he was sitting there goofing around, and I took a picture of him and went back to the store. And he says, hey, this picture's better than the one I've got. So maybe I'll help catch him.
Yeah, or no cash bailout. Well, I don't know where you are. Where do you live? Oh, you live in New Mexico. How's this?
Yeah.
How's the bail system out there?
It's still there. The governor's trying to get rid of it, but she's running out of time because this is her second term, and she's not allowed to have another one. So that's the one good thing about this state anyway. Maybe we'll get ourselves a good governor after this one.
Well, for a guy to be that old, I'm thinking that it's probably a no-cash bail state. Is it no cash?
I don't know, because we've got bail bondsmen out there, so they're actually putting money up for bail. So I guess they're still taking cash here. So kind of surprises me, but.
Yeah, and the Dems are wondering how come crime has been on the increase the past few years. Well, if you take the bar, which was at like $100 in some cities, and you raise it to $750 for a felony, and then you give the cops directions to find out if they need those TV sets, those 29 inches and 35 inch plasma sets that they've stolen, and if they do need them, then, you know, you really shouldn't bring them into the station. Well, I kind of think crime would be on the rise.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I know it is here. But did you hear about, I think it was California raised their minimum wage from $15 to $20 an hour, I think, something like that?
I might have seen the headline, but I don't remember reading anything about it.
Well, apparently Chipotle has come out, their CEO has come out and said that their prices are going to have to go up exponentially because they got to be able to pay their employees, which, so there's probably a lot of companies that are going to be going out of business in California.
Well, I was just reading today about chains. They're going out of business. The chain restaurants, a lot of them that we thought were financially stable, they may be going out of business. Yeah.
Yep. Well, it kind of looks like we're starting to lose some people here. And I think we've pretty much covered the gamut of most of the things. If you guys wish, is there going to be another show around tonight that from anybody, Joe or Donnie or Lorianne or...
At this time, that would only be Ron Reck, right?
Ron Reck, yeah. I haven't seen him.
Yeah, it's usually Ron Reck that'll put on a late night show, yeah. But I don't see anything set up.
Well, I just wanted to say before you close down here that even though Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg are leftists and liberals, one thing they did do justice to is the greatest generation of World War II with Band of Brothers and the Pacific, And now they got Masters of the Air out. I don't know if any of you guys have seen it. I've watched the first four episodes, and they are a suitable tribute to those men who flew those heavy bombers and took those horrific casualties in the first 2 years of the American strategic bombing effort. I mean, it's an eye-opener, and it's pretty good if you haven't seen it. It's on Apple, and streams on Apple, and you might want to catch it. It's pretty good.
Well, speaking of Spielberg, what did you think of Private Ryan?
Oh, well, Private Ryan. I thought the first 30 minutes was about as horrifically framed example of what happened on Omaha Beach in the 29th Infantry Division than anything I've ever seen. I mean, she depicted it almost exactly the way Cornelius Ryan wrote of it in The Longest Day, and other writers have described how horrifically bad it was in those first hours. He did it about, but the rest of the movie was kind of, I don't know what to put it after that. It veered off into allegory land, and a lot of things about it that I know about, you know, Normandy campaign, especially the early days, was kind of off. But it had its moments, even after. But that opening beat scene just made it up for the rest of the movie, any faults in the rest of the movie.
Yeah, well, they had advisors who were, I think, on the beach at that time, in real, you know, back in World War II, and I think they had them as advisors. And I think they, most of the money spent on the film was for those first 30, 35 minutes, was to have that beat scene as realistic as possible.
Yeah. I mean, utter confusion, utter havoc. The men are utterly stymied. They couldn't move. They couldn't go anywhere. Everything about Omaha Beach, nothing went the way it was planned. Everything that went right on Omaha Beach was a result of improvisation of the men on the beach making ad hoc plans because everything had gone to hell, and the naval gunfire support that they got from destroyers offshore that literally almost ran aground to deal with German dual-purpose guns in the bunkers. Without that, they wouldn't have got off the beach, or the Germans could have rolled up Omaha Beach and then went each way down both beaches, the British beaches and the Utah Beach, and just tore up the whole German invasion effort. But it was because of those men on that beach improvising plans, because the plans just completely went to shit. They just missed those, not crack German troops, but a battle experience division that had been moved in. And was the only significant German unit that escaped detection before D-Day because the intelligence on the beaches was meticulous. But somehow they missed the 352nd German division that got put in place. And that is why it went as bad as it did. I mean, those guys were veterans. They didn't panic under fire. And they had their fire plans laid out, and they made them pay. I mean, they made the Americans pay. There was one machine gun team in one bunker probably killed 800 Americans by themselves. That's the estimate they get on this one bunker. Over 2,000 Americans were killed on Omaha Beach alone that first 9 hours. 2,000.
What I especially liked about Spielberg, he does have a talent for showing frozen faces in such a way that without emotion can express fear. I liked his filming of the PT boats and how the soldiers inside showed their fear. Well, of course, they moved around, too. It wasn't just frozen fear. But how they threw up inside the PT boat. And, you know, it exemplified the courage that they had because they were fearful and they had right, very much of a right to be fearful. And they went ahead with their duty anyway, and being almost mowed down by the Germans right then and there on the beach, and they still forged ahead. He did a great job. Great job.
Yeah. There are a couple of little details that somebody is going to notice, but I don't think the audience would. I think it kind of served the frame. You know, when they had, like they had at the initial part when they were coming off the Higgins boats, you know, the landing craft, and the ramp came down, and you could see the German machine gunners in the same frame as the men coming off the beach. Well, the bunkers weren't that close to the water line. They were a little bit further back. Because you got to remember, they had to cross like 300-400 yards of shingle to get to the seawall. So none of the bunkers were that close that you're seeing in that frame. But I think for artistic purposes, it would illustrate, you could see the machine gun and the soldiers getting cut down in the same frame, and it kind of brought it home to you. So I said, okay, for artistic purposes, I understand. That made sense. I get it. You know, things like that, that further the story and make you understand what those men were up against, I think it was almost perfect in that respect. Almost perfect. And one of the best scenes is where Tom Hanks is rallying his men at the foot of that bunker, and he's trying to get him to, you know, maybe he's taking the chewing gum, putting it on the mirror, and putting it on the bayonet, and looking around to look to see where the guns are so he can issue instructions to his men. That is the kind of thing officers did over and over again. I mean, you know, ones who were left, alive and unwounded, they just gathered ad hoc groups of men together and just had them go. You got to get off the beach. You got to get off the beach. No matter what else you do, you got to get off the beach. Everything depends on getting off the beach. And you got to get up those draws and those exits, because without it, the whole invasion plan is going to go on. You got to get off the exits, because that's the only way vehicles can get through. And, I mean, the improvisation levels and the men who just took it up on their own initiatives were just fantastic. You ever read the accounts of what those men did? Remember, everything went to shit. Everybody was dead or wounded. I'm talking about the leadership, the big leadership. You had NCOs and junior officers left. And a fantastic general named Brigadier General Dutch Cota, who was assistant division commander of the 29th Division, and he was acting like a buck sergeant squad leader, gathering up groups of men and attacking bunkers with a Thompson submachine gun. He was a brigadier general. And he was leading these men like, he should have got the Medal of Honor that day. But for some reason, they didn't give it to him. They gave him the Distinguished Service Cross. But what he did was really, again, beyond belief. A brigadier general. He was leading men like he was a squad leader. Men like that who just did those kind of things over and over again. Just dozens and dozens of times in different places, and it made the difference.
Soldiers hit the beach, running along, holding on with their intestines about to fall out of their stomach.
Man, they had almost every square yard of that beach zeroed in with some kind of fire, either interlocking bands of machine gun fire or pre-registered mortar and artillery fire, almost every square yard. And remember, the bombing... The heavy bombers that bombed the beach, they delayed their drop because they were afraid they'd hit the landing craft coming in. They were supposed to crater the beach with bombs so the soldiers would have cover coming off the beach. They could fall, get into the bomb craters and get defilade protection from the machine gun fire. Well, they completely missed the beaches and the beach defenses. Completely. There wasn't a shell crater on it. It was nothing but flat sand, and the seawall is there, and the shingle, and they're wide open for the German machine guns and mortars. These guys in the first wave didn't have a chance. 80% casualties in the first wave. Didn't have a chance.
And they kept
all those
going.
Guys, all those guys, you know what all those guys did in the first wave? Pretty much all those guys in the first wave were able to do was bring in the machine guns, rifles, and ammunition that they dropped when they were cut down. So the succeeding waves, when they lost theirs, either in the surf because they had to bail out of the landing craft, were able to come up and grab up and have something to shoot with. It was horrific. I cannot imagine being on something like that and still functioning, having your mind able to work and do what you got to do.
Yeah, and with all the bullets that were coming at them, they just it just amazes me that they actually kept going.
Hell, man, how many ships involved in that?
5,000. 5,000.
Yeah, at least 5,000.
Of all types, you know, landing craft, transport ships, naval warships, PT boats. You look at all the landing, the Higgins boats, the LCBPs, the LCIs, the landing craft, infantry, all of it. You add them all up, there's about 5,000 crafts all that.
Dang.
And that doesn't count the airplanes going over here. The Luftwaffe was almost completely absent. I mean, that day there was maybe one or two bombing attacks on the beaches. The Allies had complete air superiority, but they didn't hit those bunkers that sit in Omaha Beach. And remember, on Utah Beach, they landed in the wrong place. They were not where they were supposed to be according to the plans. But again, they had another great general on the spot, Brigadier General Theodore Roosevelt Jr. Well, they gave him the Medal of Honor for what he did. He said, we're going to start the invasion. We're in the wrong place. We're going to start from here. And here's how we're going to improvise it. And he brilliantly improvised the plan to take advantage of the fact that we can do it from where we are. And his leadership on the spot from the very front was the difference in sorting out the confusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man, them Germans were some fighting motherfuckers.
Man, let me tell you something. Like Field Marshal Bernard Law Montgomery said, you don't know war until you have fought the German soldier, and he fought him in two world wars. They almost killed him in the first. He was badly wounded in the First World War, and he fought him from North Africa all the way through the end of the war, and he said even beaten, there wasn't nobody who fought like the Germans. Not because they were the bravest or the most ferocious or anything else, but because they had such a coherent plan of training, battlefield organization, and execution. But few armies in the war had consistently evenly distributed amongst all their ranks, even in defeat and even with inexperienced troops. They could just form battle groups out of ad hoc units of cut up pieces of men, form them into effective combat units, and often reverse the situation. There weren't many armies in the war that could do it like the Germans could. Because they had such a consistent and well-practiced method of battlefield execution that they trained their army relatively uniformly throughout all the ranks. And that's what made them so special. Now, where they were weak was in logistics. They didn't have a lot of fuel. And they had a crazy man as their strategic boss, Hitler. He didn't do nothing right after France fell in 1940 strategically. They had a problem, like I said, with logistics. They had a problem with intelligence, and they didn't have the strategic air arm. But on the battlefield, when it came to tactical execution, they were probably the best of the war until maybe the summer of 1944 when the Soviets and the Americans met or exceeded them.
Well, you know, as good as the Germans was, the damn Russians was something else, too.
Yeah.
Especially when they
remember, they did it with the Russian style of fighting, man. It wasn't like they had any finesse about it, although they did develop the deep theory of deep battle theory that Stalin had tried to root out of his army with the purges in 1937. You had far-thinking guys like this guy named Marshal Tukhachevsky who was trying to bring sophistication to the Soviet way of war, but the problem for him and all the men who thought like him and the leaders who thought like him was, it required a measure of personal initiative and independence. And Stalin didn't like that shit because he was a commie, a centralized dictator commie, and he was very fearful of people taking action independently. That's one of the reasons why he got purged, along with all the other far-seeing generals in the Soviet Army, which is why the Germans were kicking their ass so bad in the first year and a half of the war. They lost all their best minds through self-inflicted wounds.
Yep.
But by the end of the war, though, they finally realized, hey, we got to wise up. You got to let your commanders take some level of initiative. People like Georgi Zhukov was a genuinely able and competent commander, and he was able to, you know, bring his vision of the battle to the particular style and attributes of the Red Army, which was a hardy bunch of peasants who could take a lot of punishment and keep going despite it. And that was a big advantage of the Soviet soldier.
Well, hell, they disassembled and uprooted factories and took them further north into Siberia. They did a winter when the damn permafrost went down about 3 or 4 feet and rebuilt them.
Oh, man. That was one of the greatest feats in warfare, man, to move those whole factories east to the Ural Mountains. I mean, I don't know if any other society might have been done like that other than one run by a ruthless dictator who would not, who would just didn't care what happened to his people as long as they accomplished what he ordered them to do. I don't think any other country in the world could have done what the Soviets did in moving those factories east, and including those tank factories, so they could turn out all them T-34s.
Yeah, then they had General January and February, the same generals that beat the heck out of Napoleon.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got the Khazars. Some people eat bullets for lunch.
You mean the Cossacks. I tell you, man, Stalin probably shot in the opening stages of Barbarossa when all these Soviet generals were trying to withdraw because that was a tactically sound thing to do, and Stalin had ordered them not to take one step back. He shot about 8 of his commanders of army groups. He had them shot, even though what they were doing was tactically sound. And the reason they were in such trouble was because Stalin had placed them to be in that position. He refused to heed the intelligence warnings about the German buildup on the border. When a German defector, who was a communist, defected to the Red Army lines and told them an attack was imminent, he knew what the battle groups were. He knew what the army groups were. He knew the direction of the axis of advance. He knew all that, and he told the Soviets what was going to happen. Stalin said he was a plant to bring about turmoil between the Soviets and the Germans. Had him shot, and he had the people who bought it to him shot. Stalin was crazy and murderous.
Yep.
But I tell you one thing, though. Once he wised up and began to let his generals have a little leeway, they were able to win the war for him through sheer numbers and through taking advantage of the strength of the Soviet Union, its terrain, and its weather. And like I said, guys like Georgi Zhukov and Rostislav and Rokossovsky and Vatutin and all these others, they were very able field marshals, and they did the job for them.
Mm-hmm.
They just were ruthless, though. They didn't care how many men they lost, pretty much.
Shit.
Tens of millions. Tens of millions.
How many Napoleon? He had like 600,000, and when it was all over, he had like 90,000 left or something like
that.
God damn.
Yeah, that's true. But amazingly, he was able to come up with an army that was almost pulled out when he came back from Elba. And he brought back, I don't know, he brought back maybe 800 troops with him. And he was able to collect a huge army by the time he got to Paris and forced Louis the 18th to abdicate. And, you know, he had essentially taken France back over again. And that's when the sixth coalition of allies decided we got to get rid of this guy once and for all. And he still came close to pulling out again against all of them. Poland was one hell of a goddamn commander, man.
People don't know that we were fighting the British. We were fighting the British here in 1812. And the Napoleon's over there fighting in 1812, 13, and 14. It must have been something in the air in the world. Everybody was fighting.
Hey, guess what? Back then, you know who came and saved the day for Wellington at Waterloo? The Prussians. Gerhard Blücher, Field Marshal Gerhard Blücher, who had been roundly trounced earlier by Field Marshal Ney, he rallied his troops again and said, don't worry, I'll get there on time like I said I would. And Napoleon's troops were able to hold the line, and the Belgians were able to hold the line until the Prussians showed up, and then that turned the tide.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Prussians are Germans.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a hell of a story, man, Waterloo. Wow. I wish that movie that they had on Napoleon would have done it better because, you know, they didn't even do Napoleon justice, man. You would never have any idea why this guy had so much charisma watching that cuckolded figure they showed in that movie that Ridley Scott did. Well, why would if I was simp like this? He was not like that. I mean, Napoleon had charisma up the booty.
Yeah.
And that's why when we follow him to the death. I'll tell you, if you want to see a series that accurately depicts his character, his strategy, and why people followed him to the death, just get that BBC series Napoleon. It's like a TV miniseries. I thought it was much better than Ridley Scott's Napoleon. It's more accurate historically, and it shows why he had so much charisma and why he was so capable and highly intelligent. The actor plays him, portrays it just right.
They've done a good job in documenting those wars, you know, with World War II 360. That's material that all children should see. It's very convenient, very accurate. It's got all the dramatization in it, but accurate. The war is there. We get through talking with World War I, World War II, and more importantly, the war in the Pacific with the Japanese. Man, there were some fierce battles.
Mm-hmm.
Some fierce battles.
Man, you want to get an idea of that. I remember what I think really got me hooked on the Second World War and the history of it was I used to watch Victory at Sea with my father when it was on TV back in the 60s. And
yeah.
We watched it together. He explained to me a lot of things about the war, and I just became fascinated by it. And it was so well. The music, it had this beautiful music score by Richard Rodgers that accompanied it, and the narration was by a guy named Alexander Scorby, who had a great dramatic presence, and it had all this incredible footage that was taken by cameramen, battlefield cameramen, and they weaved it together so wonderfully. You just sat there enthralled by it. Every week, it was like a half hour. It was fantastic. I remember when I was watching it, it was just fantastic. I said, wow, this actually happened? And you're part of it, Dad? I said, man, it really got my imagination going.
Yeah.
Hell, man, every Saturday when we was kids, we'd get four kitchen chairs, put two on either side of the TV, put two more out, lay blankets and sheets across them like a tent. We crawl up in there and watch war movies all day. We'd watch John Wayne kick the Indians ass in the morning and kick the Japs ass in the evening.
I still say, though, I think his best World War II movie, even though he wasn't the star in it, was that they were expendable. I think that was one of the best war movies, not only to come out of that period, but just one of the best World War II movies of all time. They were expendable. About those PT boat sailors in the early part of the war when the United States was losing. I mean, that movie is so goddamn good, man. If you haven't seen it, you need to watch it. It is just out fucking standing. Robert Montgomery's performance at a PT boat skipper, because he was in real life, he got the Silver Star for being a PT boat skipper and the destroyer executive officer in World War II. He actually fought in combat in the Pacific in World War II as a PT boat skipper. And he plays a PT boat skipper in They Were Expendable.
Mm-hmm.
And his performance is just outstanding.
Yeah, I think
it was Wayne's best World War II movie. Yeah. They're expendable. And even though it's a propaganda movie, It offers an unflinching look at a bunch of men who are literally asked to lay down their lives. Like what the general says, you guys are like a team in baseball. You have to do a sacrifice bunt. You know you're going to be put out, but we need you to do it to advance the ball. And they tell them, you know, you're doomed. You're going to die pretty much or get captured. And that's almost like death with the Japanese, but we've got no other choice but to put you here. And they said, okay, they accepted it. They accepted their fate. And they delayed the Japanese. Look how long they delayed the Japanese. They didn't have any supplies. They didn't have any ammunition. They didn't have any food. They had malaria, dysentery, cholera, typhus, jungle fever, every goddamn thing. You know, and but they still held out against the Japanese for 6 months in the Philippines and in Corregidor and Bataan. And that made all the difference.
Hell, them battles there in Midway and Guadalcanal, when you had Japanese and U.S. destroyers fighting each other, they both, cannon, their guns are damn near flat shooting at each other.
Now, if they hadn't held out like they did, that stage would not have been set for Midway and the Coral Sea. It's because, and you know, and also, you know, the Doolittle Raid, which caused the Japanese to switch their strategic thrust because they were so embarrassed by an air attack on Tokyo, they decided to accelerate their plans for the Aleutian Islands in Midway. And that led to the Battle of Coral Sea in Midway. Well, we know what happened in Midway. The whole strategic tide of the Pacific War changed in 4 fucking minutes.
Mm-hmm.
4 minutes. The whole tide of the Pacific War changed. And the Japanese were there on, from then on, for the rest of the war, on a strategic defensive. And it's all because some guys accepted the notion they had to sacrifice themselves to hold up the Japanese. And they did.
Yeah.
I mean, the soldiers on Bataan, they had a National Guard tank outfit from Illinois, from Maywood, Illinois, that also went over there and sacrificed themselves to hold up the Japanese effort. A light tank battalion, they were part of the sacrifice. I mean, and they captured 10,000 American soldiers along with about another 50 or 60,000 Filipino troops who were part of the American Army, part of the Territorial Force, because the Philippines was a colony of the United States, and they had Filipinos who were part of the Army under MacArthur after Pearl Harbor, because MacArthur had gone over there to be a generalissimo under the Philippine President Quezon. He commissioned him as like a field marshal in charge of the Philippine Army. But then after Pearl Harbor, MacArthur got, his commission got reactivated in the regular army. Roosevelt put him in command under of the Philippine army there. And then he was running the whole show from then on out in the Southwest.
Yep.
Well, them Doolittle raids was a one-way trip. And you talk about some vicious people. Them Japanese are just vicious. After the Doolittle raid, when they found out that the Chinese assist those planes that could either ditch in the sea or make it as close as they could to China, hell, the Japanese went into China and killed 250,000 Chinese because of their participation in helping American fight flyers at that time.
If you want to read a story of horrific war crimes and atrocities, you had to read about the Battle of Manila in 1945 when the Americans landed in the Philippines. The Japanese committed the most god-awful, horrific war crimes probably in the entire war. They killed over 100,000 Filipino civilians deliberately. When I'm talking about collateral damage, that was a lot more of them, and just got caught up in the fighting and got killed by fire from both sides. I'm talking about deliberately massacring Filipinos, 100,000 of them in Manila, in the most horrific ways. They'd rape the women literally to death. They cut off their breasts. They cut their vaginas out. They bayoneted people, bayoneted babies. I mean, it was God. They went into a frenzy of slaughter and killing.
thing.
And if you think I doubt me, you ought to read this book called Rampage. This guy details all of the shit with the stories of the survivors and the witnesses and the stories they tell of what the Japanese did. And then the Japanese, being what they are, would fight to the death. They just wouldn't surrender.
Yep.
Man, the American infantry went in there. They had like 1,000 Americans got killed trying to take Manila. And it was house to house, room to room, no quarter given. Japanese just would not surrender. Just would not surrender. They had to rifle them out of every single room.
And
the fighting was like,
it
was like the Pacific version of Stalingrad, really.
And that was a fanatical Japanese general, I guess, who wouldn't pull his regiment out when ordered to.
Right. And oddly enough, it was Yamashita. General Yamashita was the commanding general overall. And he ordered the commander of the naval force, he was a naval force commander, Iwaguchi. He ordered him to pull his troops out. And this guy decided, no, we're not going to surrender Manila without a fight. He decided on his own initiative to disobey Yamashita's orders, because Yamashita wanted to have it an open city and just let the Americans come in and take it. And he wanted to go back to the hills and wage kind of like a guerrilla warfare against the American forces. And Iwaguchi said, oh, I'm not doing that. I don't care what you say, General. I got my own sense of Japanese honor in Bushido, and he kept his forces in there to fight the Americans, and that's why it became so goddamn bloody. And then MacArthur, in a fit of spite, because Yamashita was the guy who defeated Wainwright at Bataan and Corregidor. He was a Japanese general who also, Rahama was the one who did it in Malaya, but Yamashita was the one who defeated, who accepted surrender of American forces in Bataan and Corregidor. And even though Yamashita ordered his troops not to fight in Manila, they held him, accused him of war crimes, they held him responsible for the actions of his troops, and they executed Yamashita after the war. I think that was kind of unfair when I read through the whole transcripts and all the evidence they had. I don't think they treated Yamashita fairly. I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
I think MacArthur had a lot of spite against him because he defeated his forces and accepted the surrender. I think he was spiteful in what he did.
I know I love listening to you, Sarge. Things you know about that.
Well, you know, I think more people should. I mean, I think it was one of the most significant events in human history. People still, to this day, when they try to relate things that are going on today to World War II, a lot of times because they don't know what happened in World War II, they get it wrong. They get it wrong because they don't know the basic facts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's like a false story, it's like Hitler. No, it's not quite like Hitler. Hitler didn't do that. I mean, he wouldn't have done what he did if he hadn't got the Soviet Ribbentrop Molotov Pact, a non-aggression pact, to secure his eastern flank so he could move west. If he hadn't done that, he couldn't move against Poland. He had to have Soviet cooperation to take Poland. And he got it. He got the Soviets to sign the deal. And a lot of people, because they don't want to blame anything that's got to do with communism, they love to overlook that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, we are actually in no man's land now, so what we're talking about will never be heard except for us.
what's his name debating himself in a chat room was enough.
We don't want to go to war against Russia.
No, definitely not.
I damn sure don't.
Look at that nuke map. Not the Tsar bomb that they have, but the one below. They said if that went off in Washington, D.C., people, anything was vaporized in a 26-square-mile area.
Mm-hmm.
Vaporizer.
I remember sitting on the Fulda Gap on the Czech border as a tank commander, waiting for the first barge Ukrainian tank army to come through the gap and wipe us out any day. That's what all of us were thinking. They kept telling us we didn't expect us to last long, but they expected to do as much damage to their forces as we could before we got wiped out. That's literally what they told us. And yep. I did not want to go to war against the Soviet Union. I said, I hope to God I get out of the army before they come through that goddamn Fulda Gap.
Yep.
Because they told us we had three phase lines we had to fall back on. And if the help hadn't gotten to us, by the time we had to hit the third phase line, it was over. Whatever one of us survived to get back at a third phase line. Because, I mean, our tanks were outnumbered like 9-1 in tanks. In personnel carriers, probably about 10 or 15-1. In infantry, something like 12-1. I don't know how long they would have expected us to last, but because we're supposed to do as much damage as we could. And you got to remember, Vietnam was a sideshow. The army was, the plans were the Soviet Union was considered the big threat. Vietnam was a sideshow as far as the army was concerned. They were looking at the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact invading Western Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad that didn't happen. I swear, thank God for Ronald Reagan. That's all I got to say. Thank God for Ronald Reagan. Shit.
Yeah. I don't think that the world would take what happened in World War II, because they would go apeshit crazy about, you know, all of the things that would happen. Call it all the criminal war and all this stuff. That kind of what happened in World War II couldn't happen again because of the way we look at it anymore.
That would be a nice thing to have happen like that, but don't put it past anybody that it won't turn out like World War II did.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think the lethality of weaponry today would make it infinitely worse.